just can't hide it.
What do you think about 2 o'clock on Thursday?
Feels like Friday.
I know. I think I get tired. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, November 9th, 2017. It is 2 p.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a county administrative workshop. We've got a fairly full agenda here today, so we're going to lead off with the sheriff. Item number 1A, request for authorization to proceed with an in-car camera project with Axon Enterprises Incorporated. It's located on page 2 of our administrative packet. We have the sheriff is in the doorway on his way in, and we have Ruth here, who is really the brains of the operation, if not the looks as well. So we'll just get started with any kind of...
Yeah, we do have a handout about the in-car camera system that we're interested in.
Before we get into this, maybe we could talk about holistically. I know that there's a number of different issues the sheriff's office actually needs to tackle, and they may have a financial impact. And what I'm looking for is that 30,000-foot conversation to say, how does this factor into the project list? And I'm aware of one potential significant liability infrastructure-wise that won't necessarily come out of the sheriff's budget. That would probably come out of property reserve. But I can see, I just like to look at how does everything stack up and the prioritization that this is, you know, costs nothing, costs a little bit. How does it factor in?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Or we can hold off on this conversation and do legal first if you want 5 minutes.
Can we do that? Please?
Let's do that. So, legal's next. Item amendment number 1 to IGA with Three Rivers School District and the City of Vance Pass to collect and remit construction excise tax. And just one item under.
We do have representatives from Three Rivers School District and Grants Pass School District here today.
Okay. We'll get to that if we need to, I guess. At this point, I think we'll just start with the conversation with the board and legal counsel. So I think that we received an IGA request from the city that was approved, and a request to sign as a three-pronged approach. There's the City of Grants Pass, the districts, and then the...
Yes.
Mr. Meltzer, is it appropriate for you to come up for the construction excise tax conversation because your department collects it?
Sure.
Okay. We really haven't talked about this as a liaison. The issue goes back through 4 of your predecessors that I've been aware of. I've had 5 directors since I've been in office. But you don't have to stay much longer to be the longest one that I've served with. So.
Year and a half, I'm going on record already.
You almost might be setting a record. So.
It's a tough crowd.
Yeah, where are we at on this, I think?
Exactly there. So we do have the signed proposed IGA from, indeed, the Three Rivers School District and from the City of Grants Pass. And the signature for the Grants Pass, for the City of Grants Pass, was dated on 5-12 of 2017. And so we wanted to check back in with the board as to whether this... what the status is, I guess, or the thinking is on this, whether anything is needed from legal at this time.
I think that what I could do is we could follow up on where we were when we had a conversation with both of the school districts. One of the most significant, I think, arguments that I heard was the fact that our neighboring counties are doing something similar. We're in excess of what we've been at historically, our rate of 50 cents and a dollar. It's 50 cents per square foot on commercial and a dollar on residential per square foot. We collect that tax, and I think we are appreciating a 1% administrative fee currently. The proposed IGA, I think, does 4, and there's a rate increase of a certain amount. I'm not really sure. But so where we're at, what the research that this office has been able to do is there's only one of our comparative counties regionally that does collect a construction excise tax. Could be wrong. Maybe we asked the wrong question or the wrong department. But when I've asked the other county commissioners, they are not collecting that in Coos, Curry, Douglas, or Klamath. Jackson is the only county that in this region is collecting a construction excise tax for the schools. So that's a little bit different than what we were presented when we were talking with the school districts. So from my standpoint, we would be more consistent to not than being keeping up with Jackson County. And their economy is significantly different than Josephine County's. So I don't want to debate the need. I think everybody agrees that the schools, you just walk into any one of the probably the middle schools, and you're going to see a significant need for facilities improvements. That's not really debatable. It's whether or not this is the appropriate means in my mind. It may not be fairly debatable, because statute says that if the school district enacts, the county will collect. I have a little bit of a challenge with that, is the mechanism to collect it is done through an intergovernmental agreement. Keyword for me being an agreement. And there hasn't been really any back and forth on this issue. I've mentioned it to two of our current superintendent of Three Rivers predecessors, Dan Cantol and the woman who was intern for a while, that it was a real challenge for the Building and Safety Department, Planning, Community Development, to collect it. And any kind of support, evidence of where it goes, why we're doing it, would be helpful. And we hadn't received anything from those two predecessors, not holding Mr. Valenzuela responsible for that. But it's a challenge for us to collect that, for me. So I think that's where we're at.
So at the last meeting, we also asked the school districts if they could be a part of the messaging related to the fees, and if they would be willing to kind of create a pamphlet or a flyer that can be a part of that.
Yeah.
I know Three Rivers has come up with something, and they have that here today as far as something they can offer to try to help with the fee. In addition, asking, I spoke with Superintendent Valenzuela, who is in Portland. So. Casey Alderson is the director of secondary education, so he's here to represent Three Rivers. And I don't remember your name, but I know you're with Grants Pass School District 7 and legal.
I'm General Bill Ransom. I'm general counsel for Grants Pass School District.
Do you guys want them to come up? Is that appropriate, or is this an internal?
Yeah, I think they're going
to
come up.
Well, I think it would be beneficial to be able to answer any of the questions that come up related to the topic. And I also had a question for legal, sure. As far as my understanding of the state law as it stands right now says if a school district opts to do this, then the jurisdictions will collect the fee. In gist interpretation.
Shall.
Yes.
I know varying groups may or may not in the neighboring counties, but our two school districts have opted to and have been for several years, and so in compliance with state law, saying if they do opt, we shall. And that's pretty straightforward as far as what the language is. So I'm, from my standpoint, I would like to take the opportunity of learning a way that we can sit down with school districts and work on those issues that are a concern, mm-hmm. and make sure that one thing I can recommend to my fellow commissioners, yesterday I was added to the recipient list of the BCC emails. So now when someone sends an email to BCC, it comes to my inbox as well as out there. There's emails we're missing that we should be seeing. And included in one I got today was a board meeting, school district board meeting, agenda and schedule, which is something that if there was a topic that was appropriate for us, we'd be able to see. And I would recommend you guys ask to have those emails as well so you can see those topics when it's appropriate.
I think that makes sense.
But I think we really can do a better job of communicating as a whole, since we're all meeting the needs of our community. We're all serving together, and it's affecting us, that we can work on those things that need to be. But I also think that this isn't the way to get those things done, that we go forward with this topic and then separately deal with those issues and try to make some improvements where we can. But I also, I know there were some statements about the last meeting, and if information was different, I'd like to give them a chance to, if there's any other feedback related to those topics.
Sure. I mean, it's at the board's discretion to have them come up if you guys have.
Yep.
I don't want to get into too much of a debate. My position is I'm settled. It's okay. Not something I'm interested in doing, and there's probably nothing that's going to convince me otherwise.
I have a question for you, Chairman, if I could.
Sure.
When you called the other counties, did you just call a commissioner and say, do you collect this, or do you know if you collect it?
I think
it?
We called their community development.
Or did you call, the tax collector and say, what's on your list?
It's usually collected through the Building and Safety Planning mm-hmm. Department, and that's where we called. Well, we also referenced and checked in with commissioners. Okay. So We did a pretty thorough investigation, couldn't find anything, and then at the Region 4 meeting, I asked individual commissioners who were liaisons to that, and they hadn't heard or didn't collect specifically. So that's all I have.
When I look at competing counties, the only county that I feel we're competing with is Jackson, because they're 30 miles from here. Douglas, you know, there's 70 miles is the biggest, you know, Roseburg. If somebody's going to move to Roseburg, if they're going to move to Roseburg, they're going to move there for a reason. If they're going to live here, you know, we may be able to pirate somebody from over there to over here because we don't have that excise tax. Would I think that would be a deal breaker? No, it's not to the effect that SDC's and huge amounts of money. It's, you know, it's a sizable, if you're building, yes, it's a deterrent, but...
I've been called into several meetings with, and probably the big one that stands out in my mind is Krauscraft. And there's been a couple of others out in the county who are just like, what is this? And why am I having to pay this? And I get the bill, you know, at the 11th hour when I'm trying to get my development permit, my certificate of occupancy or whatever, and they can't get it without, you know, writing that $30,000 check. And then I don't know how to defend it, and I appreciate that we're going to, you know, that's probably the end result. I just know that it's not been a very positive taste, and reaching out to two of the predecessors of Mr. Valenzuela's and hearing virtually nothing for the 7 years that I've been in office, and then having this IGA with an increased rate and no conversation about what it is that, where the money's going and how we can bridge that communication gap. It's the same thing that we get with collecting the taxes for you guys. I've not gotten a thank you note for doing the $7 billion worth of assessment, spending $1 million of general fund where we don't get to appropriate it to the sheriff's office. It's just that challenge of, like, there's such a disconnect between what we do here and what the benefit is to the school districts, the city, and everywhere else, that it's like if I have an inkling of an opportunity through an IGA, which is there's an agreement in there, to say, you know what, I just can't do anymore. There's no appreciation. I'm over it. And I get that there's money and a need, but that's where I'm at.
One of the issues I have is that when you actually look at your tax statement or any statement, like for instance, if we do this and she delivers, this is, here you go, there's your bill, write the check, then they go, who's the bad guy in the room? Julie and her department, Josephine County, they're the bad guy. Same thing with a regular tax bill, property tax bill. Who's the bad guy? Well, I wrote that check out to Josephine County.
There was no invoice
from the schools to that taxpayer. It was Josephine County's invoice to the taxpayer. You guys skated. There's no obligation or anything. If somebody actually understood it, that's one thing. But they don't. So I don't know whether a separate invoice, if you go with this tax, that she has a form and fills it out and says, well, this is going to the schools and this is what you have to go for that. Put it all in the same invoice, but there's same statement, but there's an invoice as to where it's all going.
And I don't see why that can't be done up ahead of time. I was talking to some contractors that had moved up from California, and this is a way bigger fee in California, same purpose kind of thing. And that's known up front. And so this would be one of those things that shouldn't be a gotcha at the end.
I don't like the old by the way.
As soon as the square footage is known of the plans, this is a fee that's associated. It's going to be, you know, I know there's a sign on the counter and stuff like that. So, you know, it's one of those things that should never be a after the fact not known or a gotcha. But you're holding up the pamphlets.
Yeah, so these are the pamphlets that, you know, I think from your conversation with Dave on... you know, what we can do to help communicate. Because it sounds like most of this is around communication, either between us and
it
you
really
guys
is.
Or builders and the county. So how can we help, I guess, spread that message? Because it is an important piece of what we do, especially in the county where we do have increased costs of travel that causes a pretty big discrepancy between us and comparable districts. And so this is, you know, one piece of it.
Yeah, what he was telling us for transportation costs is just outrageous.
Our buses travel almost 10,000 miles a day. Yeah. So that's New York back and back to New York. Yeah. So, and we're funded on the same level as District 7. Right. And so it's, It is something that we do battle in the county.
I don't want it miscommunicated that I think that everything is predicated on the construction excise tax. It's cumulative effect in the minds of the...
Absolutely.
You know, that's what it is.
Yeah, and so, and I have those same conversations with people that are moving here, that not necessarily, they're not deterred by the excise
not
tax.
Bad,
they're deterred by... You know, the perception of the county versus the city, mm-hmm. or Josephine County versus Jackson County.
Right.
And so those are the conversations that I have and had just yesterday with somebody that chose to go to Medford instead. And so anything that we're going to do that's going to pull from our general fund, which is what
this
would do, would have a significant impact on our ADM, you know, student enrollment, and people coming to the area.
Yeah, well, they don't want to look at a rundown school and say, that's where I want to send
Absolutely.
My kids to. What do you guys, what's in your budget for this last year, this year?
I don't have the exact, I got this meeting yesterday. Dave and Kirk from District 7
are... They didn't have a number either.
And Portland.
And that was interesting. I thought that was a pretty relevant question, like, are we talking? The number that I have in my mind was $340,000. I think that was.
I think that's about accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a chump change for what, you know, that's a couple new roofs or one and a half or something.
And that's something, you know, we deal with, especially this time of year. You know, sitting in the Veterans Day ceremony at Hidden Valley today, we have 120 veterans that we have on our campus and a great community event, and we've got, you know, leaks from the ceiling. You know, and in the hallway and things like that, that we want to put the best product forward for our students and for our community and for people that are looking to move here. And this would definitely present a big challenge for us.
I'm amazed that you have a school built in 1912 still operational with kids in it. As on the back page of it, it shows the picture of Applegate School.
Yes.
Wow. Well, we're in a 1911.
Yeah, but it's not kids. We're
I little. Went there.
Yeah.
In that year.
And it's, and coming from, you know, coming from District 7 into Three Rivers, you know, and having, you know, roughly 10,000 students that we both serve together, I think it is a county-wide effort. And, you know, I don't want to take up all of the time here. I'll let you share, too. But the number of kids and families that we are talking about here impacting, I think, is... significant.
You know, I don't really have a lot to add except that you know, just the grants pass contract doesn't sound like it's an issue on today. Except, I mean, our position is it's the.
Have we received it?
No,
we don't. Have
we haven't received a contract from grants pass.
We have a current contract with we have a current government agreement that's sufficient to deal with all this. So you know, there's no reason in my mind to have an amendment or to propose anything. I mean, to the extent that there is an issue like we discussed, you know, with the actual, you know, administrative fee, the statute allows up to 4% if the county's administrative fees. Certainly it shouldn't be an impediment or a problem for the county.
That's not what it's not an issue,
I mean,
for me. And
it's a school district. The statute allows the school district to pass the tax.
We don't have to debate that. I know what state statute
is. I mean, that's what it is. So I mean, I don't really see a whole lot to argue here. I mean, yeah, to the extent that the county feels like they're being blamed, it's not unreasonable to point the finger at the school district because the school district's the one that you know, enacts the tax and collects the tax. And I think the statute pushes a lot of the...
That's the element of
the issue. I'm sorry, it receives the money through the tax collection efforts. And, you know, with regard to the tax bill comment on the portion that goes to school districts, as I understand funding of school districts, it's done on an ABM basis. It's based on the student seats. It's paid through the state. So it may say on your tax statement that, you know, Three River School District tax or whatever, but it's property tax, but that money doesn't go directly to the school district. It goes to the state, who then allocates it based on student attendance.
Nobody who writes their property tax check to Josephine County cares. Well, they know that their money isn't theirs anymore. And they wrote
that they
tax
paid it to
Josephine
County.
That it goes to the state and comes back.
But the state's the one doing it. So, I mean, for the county, the position, if the county has issues with these taxes, they should take them up with the state, not with the school district, who's just enforcing their rights under the state statutes.
We're not on the same page.
So I had tried to contact the district office. I'd left a message for Superintendent Cole a month and a half ago or so. He called me three or four weeks later because somebody just stuck a note on his desk, but I was calling because legal had notified us that we had not received an updated contract from the...
we have no record.
Grants Pass School District.
Yeah, we need to get...
And so...
You don't have a copy of the intergovernmental agreement?
Well, the reason this one changed, it went from 1% to 4%. So if yours is still at 1%, we've never received the increase.
I don't know that there's ever been an
okay.
Resolution.
So only Three Rivers is looking to change it? And
we have a current agreement, so I don't know that we need to do anything about it.
This one was increasing, and we had understood that the other one
and the
was
administrative
also,
fee is not the point.
If the administrative fee is not a problem, then we don't need
it. It's the cost. It's the increase. It's us collecting it without this. And I think this does a lot. You know, at the end of the day, I think I'm the commissioner with the issue here. I've been the liaison to building and safety and planning for 7 years. There hasn't been another commissioner, well, other than Commissioner Walker, for a little while. And so I've kind of heard this through five different planning directors. That's the challenges. I don't think anybody else has really experienced that. So that could be why I've kind of got this as my issue.
Yeah.
The rest of the board is for this, as I understand it, to move it forward. And that's perfectly fine. You've got a quorum of the sitting commissioners that can definitely endorse something like this. I don't want to belabor it too much. I think it's great that you guys are aware of the challenge that we're experiencing when Julie collects this, and you've done exactly what we're looking for to solve this to where we can solve it, what we can do, and move it forward. I don't know that if there's an ability to reduce the administrative element for our office is very small. It's asking for a check. So it doesn't need to increase to 4%. In fact, if you can reduce it, if it were $1.26 or something, I think it's close to that, and 63 cents for commercial. If we could take it down by a couple of percents because we're only collecting 1% at where we're at, I'm fine with that. And I think Ms. Schmelzer would agree that anything we can do to reduce the cost to the clients out there is our number one goal and consideration.
Absolutely. And we don't want to put an undue burden on anybody in our community.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage you to maybe reach out to our school board and maybe come to a work session and explain some of these issues that you do face, because this was something that was passed by our school board to move forward, and
yeah,
so that's something that
I think Commissioner Morgan makes the point. I wish I would have been aware of that meeting, and I would probably wouldn't have changed the direction, maybe the 1% to 4% or what have you, but just to be in the room during that conversation and invited to do so would have been huge for me, but I haven't talked to Mr. Valenzuela about this, and he's right to feel like, what are you talking about? This is the first conversation. It's not the first conversation I've had in that office with two of his predecessors.
Yeah.
It just didn't get relayed to him,
and
that's not his fault.
Yeah, and I think for them, they would have probably voiced those, knowing our board and the diverse makeup that we have from each of the communities, is something that they would have welcomed the conversation.
Yeah.
And fallen somewhere in between, I think, is...
would have been great.
Is the city's dollar and cent amount the same as the county's on this proposal right now? Or is there a separate IGA for both, for each one of them? Because if you're
sounds
saying...
Sounds like there's a difference.
If there, in other words,
yours,
is it a buck and a half and 75, and is it a dollar and a half and 75? Are they consistent between city and county?
You mean the school district?
Yes, the excise tax, the amount you're going to charge for 1,000 per square foot or whatever.
I don't know the answer to that.
Because if we're going to jockey, as you say, instead of going to 4%, leave it at 1%, but go from $1.50 to $1.36 or something like that, does that affect theirs over there?
No, it's done by school district. Okay. And so each district can have
whatever. Each district can have a different...
Yeah, districts can have separate. And I don't believe we consulted with District 7 when we made that change. And so, and I don't think it's something that
I actually looked at one
in the community.
Out of Portland, and there's multiple school districts, there's like 8 school districts, and every school district had a different levy that was charged depending on which school district you're in. And some of them were still, like one of the 8 in Portland area was at the base minimum, the dollar.
So the answer to his question is yes, there is a difference.
There's a difference between cities, depending on where
I just did, if we were going to change our amount, does that affect the amount that the city's charging?
Yeah.
And your answer is no.
No.
that we're separate from them?
They are. They're all separate. And they're,
okay.
But it kind of would be nice if they were consistent.
And if we do, then if we do say yes, you'll supply Julie's office with a bunch of these.
Absolutely.
So when she hands the guy the deal, this will be stapled to it, so that she doesn't have to answer a bunch of questions and get her.
You can give him my card, and I'll give a tour of our schools as they go through, if you'd like. Also with it, but
it's very convincing.
Yeah, we would have no problem doing that.
You don't need 50 cents. You need $5. You need. I mean, it's intense. The need is significant. That's why I said I never debated the need. It's the disconnect between us collecting it and you guys setting a rate and just, done, nice, fun. No, not a lot for us. But I think we bridged that gap. And that's something I could be in favor of. We just got to get there on the communication and keep it up.
Yeah. Because we can make sure you're on the email list.
Much longer.
I mean, it goes out to...
Well, like I said, mine's been addressed because now the BCC comes to my inbox, and it took 11 months for me to realize that was an option. And I would encourage that to be a standard for all the commissioners, because then we can see exactly what's being sent to us.
Yeah.
So.
And I'll relate to Dave also in the superintendent's office.
Yeah.
That the communication between our two entities needs to get better.
Yeah. He's real busy. I can imagine.
Yeah, but we have avenues of communication with email and website that it shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Most of that information is readily available anyway. I mean, the type of information you're looking for the amount going to where and what the budget is, a lot of those are approved by the school board every year for capital, long-term projects, things of that nature. That's what these funds would go to.
I'm not going to go look for it on your behalf.
Yeah. No, but we can share a long-term facility plan, and
that would be huge.
That's what goes towards this. And that's something that I think could be included here.
Perfect.
Or in the pamphlet.
And I think the staff, we are going to hear it. They hear it first. If I hear one, they've heard 10. So it's the one that they said, this is not going anywhere. I would really appreciate you talking to our liaison, Commissioner Hare.
Yep.
So.
Great. We have, we have challenges where, from the planning side, we've been dropping all of our fees to encourage development. And all at once, there's fees increasing beyond our control. And then when we calculate what something's going to cost somebody and then come to find out that, a fee has changed that we're not aware of.
It's actually more instead of less. We take the hit, nobody else does.
Right, and we're also trying to promote ourselves. I mean, we're proud of the fact that Josephine County is one of the few counties that does not have system development charges. So it's one of the things we have going for us to try and attract businesses. But then when they get in the door, it's kind of like a bait and switch when they find out they have this huge fee coming up.
Is there a way of communicating that ahead of time? So when they start the process instead of at the end of the process?
I think that's where those brochures help. Because, really not staff's responsibility, I guess, to be explaining the tax. But it does help to have that brochure to hand out ahead of time or to put on our website so people know what's coming ahead.
Yeah. We'll get a better job of packaging that whole thing. Wally?
Oh, do you know whether this revenue to the school district is exempt from the equalization formula?
I don't, but Lisa Cross would be the... She's our...
It might be insightful. Yeah. It sounds like other counties are not collecting this, and it'd be just an interesting piece of information.
Yeah, I just know that there's 62 other school districts in the state that are also collecting this. And so it's not... Mm-hmm. And according to... ODE, he hasn't heard of anybody not collecting the tax that's there.
Meaning that anyone who's asked has not been refused.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think we've spent some time on this, and I appreciate you guys being here.
Yeah, thanks for
discussing this.
We appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Having it like.
So we'll be moving this item forward on the administrative calendar. Any matters
every
for
year?
Legal?
So the executive session got dealt with from Tuesday?
Sorry, what was that?
Okay.
Yes.
The Mercy Flights executive session to what needed to be done. I think we did.
I think so.
Yep. It's Sheriff Daniel, right?
Sir.
Couldn't tell with all that facial hair.
Actually, I'm looking at the cleanly shaven, and I'm wondering what's up with that.
I got to keep it somewhat
professional looking.
Yeah.
I might even trim this a little bit.
It looks good.
You might try walking backwards.
Well, you know it's...
Oh, jeez.
Teasing. DeYoung.
Seriously.
I didn't even say commissioner.
I'm your liaison.
DeYoung.
So that's for funny. Those that don't know, this is No Shave November. Sheriff's Office went in with the concept of raising some money, and our deputies who wanted to participate donate $50, and that pot of money at the end of the November goes to Dornbecker's Children's Hospital.
Nice.
So that's what we're doing. That's the... It's all for... Not all for nothing.
What an excellent program.
So I already passed out the Axon handout. My first thought here.
Okay.
I think we started with more of a 30,000 foot question
that yes.
had to do with what are the comprehensive things that you're looking at in your program. We discussed a potential liability in the jail of a second story issue. That remedy, in my opinion, would come out of the building fund. It wouldn't be direct cost to your program. Mm-hmm. It's something you've inherited. It's not something you caused. So, mm-hmm. but what are there other programmatic things that could be in the queue for this, or what's the look in saying this is the one that is more important than that or any other kind of a deal? That's the first question I
sure.
had. And then after that, it's like, well, if you think your budget supports this, which it does, I'm answer's yes.
Yeah. But it's thanks, Commissioners, for having us. It's my responsibility at the Sheriff's Office to make sure that we are up to date with our industry standards, industry practices. I think evidence is obviously paramount in gathering evidence. Transparency, obviously, is also very, very important. And I think many agencies across the nation, if not most, have gone down this hole for video. There's two types of video. You look at your in-car camera systems that are going to record conversations up to 30, 40, 50 feet away from the car as far as interviews. You also have body cams that can record. Let me go back to the vehicle in-car camera systems that the state police have, the city of Grants Pass has, Medford has, Douglas County has, Douglas City of Roseburg has. They're really made for transparency and safety. That's what it boils down to. Internal affairs complaints, investigations on officers that were rude on traffic stops, driving recklessly, things like that, can all hold both the citizen and the deputy accountable to their actions. A prime example, which is why I was delayed here, is I had a vehicle just out on Riverbanks Road in a pursuit. I don't know what's going on in that pursuit, listening to the radio, nor do I have any evidence after the fact of what went on in that pursuit, right, wrong, or indifferent. And with the Axon system, I will have the ability to punch it into my iPhone and get real-time video of what's going on in that pursuit right now. So I can terminate, I can make decisions at an administrative mm-hmm. level that need to be made. And once again, 2 weeks ago, we had an officer in a pursuit with a vehicle up off of Pleister Road, came out of Wolf Creek, and there were shots fired after the vehicle rolled back down and the individual went for a gun. So that's type of evidentiary things that we need. Not to mention the damage to the vehicle that happened once that Ford F-450 slammed back down into the vehicle after it foot-bailed. So there's just an astronomical number of reasons, I think, that are all realistic and up to industry standard that other agencies have figured out. Our organization does not have that, and that's where I want to go, is down that hole so we can be more transparent and gather more evidence. We've done three different bids. We've looked at three different companies. And met with two of them, and were provided bids, and we believe the Axon Taser system is currently one of, if not the best, systems for us. Certainly the most advanced, let's put it that way. So
does it coordinate with your current tasers as well? Just being that's the same company?
You can. You can have a system where if your taser is drawn and turned on, it can activate camera systems. this particular system is if you have one car that has the Axon system, say you turn on your emergency lights, every car within a 30-foot radius would turn on their lights, as their camera systems automatically as well. So it is very advanced. And I apologize, the project manager for this was able to make it this morning, could not make it this afternoon. It's a reserve deputy that works in surveillance and whatnot, at any rate.
Well, and years ago, I imagine the equipment that used to be in the cars, they used to have camera systems in the patrol cars when I was a reserve, and that was before 2005.
Yeah, like a Panasonic type system. Yeah. A couple of the cars have something like that. They're antiquated.
But they're not digital. They're not.
No. This we also coordinate with evidence.com, and this is a download system where when a deputy is out in the field and they go through a day's worth of you can also download in the field, but when you roll back into the station, it automatically feeds up through Wi-Fi and goes into a data bank. And if there's
that's what I was going to ask. What's the integrated with John and our IT system for server requirements?
No, it's all in the cloud. Nothing.
We have to pay for storage.
Yes. There's a flat rate fee for the 5 years, okay. The first 5 years of storage. If there's any issues, the company's well known. To be honest with you, when I went back to the National Sheriff's Institute in Colorado, over half the sheriffs all had Axon. Yeah.
That's encouraging. We're not trying something new.
No. We vetted them very well. They came down and showed us the demo and showed what we needed. The issue with the money portion of it, just so I'm going to bring you up to date on where the sheriff's office is at, and Ruth, you can hand those out. Currently, we've been in a huge hiring process. We haven't been able to hire as fast as we want. Therefore, there's been some money definitely saved in the process. And, of course, none of this is from the levy money from the corrections. That is not touchable, and we won't touch that. But it will. If you look at this, you will see that the sheriff's office budget, separate from corrections, is $457,000 under budget right now. At the end of the first quarter, through October. So there is obviously some wiggle room for making some improvements. Grants, and Ruth, I'll let you speak to that.
Mm-hmm. And one grant we're looking at is the firehouse subgrant. It's only up to $25,000, but that would definitely help out. So we're working on that one right now.
A quarter, that's substantial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've already submitted an application to policegrantshelp.com. They review our application, and then they get back to us with grants that would apply, and they can even help us write them for a fee.
I talked to JJ, I think, or Arthur, about CIS. When we were at Region 4, jail specifically was the highest liability for CIS out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine patrols were right there as number two in a situation.
Yes.
And a lot of times when we have an ability to come up to industry standards and find ourselves better able to defend against fraudulent, flippant mm-hmm. lawsuits from people who just want to use and abuse the system, there's incentives through CIS to be able to come up to that standard. And I think we were going to be looking into that. I don't know.
Yeah, JJ had mentioned something to that effect to me. I think that's certainly another another possibility. It's not my intent to pay for all of this out of a sheriff's office budget. We're going to keep diving in for grants. We're going to keep looking for money. And I'd like to see at least half of it paid for with outside
money. Sounds
like
you're well underway, and the CIS one could probably shore up the difference and get there.
Might be able to help.
I like the fact that it's doable in your existing budget and that you're pursuing stuff already. You've done your diligence. And I can't say enough about the fiscal responsibility of your administration as opposed to other administrations I've dealt with in 7 years. It was exactly the opposite. Mid-year through, I remember, $287,000 in overtime in excess of the proposed budget, which was more than, you know, we had done before. So I totally commend and say wholeheartedly endorse what you're trying to do here.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Sense. I appreciate that.
This is north of $5,000 a car. Is it transferable? We've got some cars that are fairly old in the fleet and will probably be cycled out in the not-too-distant future. Or can they be taken out of one car and installed in another one?
Absolutely. Okay. No questions about it.
Good question.
Well, do they upgrade at any time? I mean, I get a cable TV box, and that's the last I ever hear from them.
Yes.
Then I find out my neighbor gets one 2 years later, and his starts a coffee in the morning, fires the car up, and takes the garage door open, and I'm still on the old cable box having to get up to change channel. Is there an upgrade?
Yes.
Automatic upgrade when new technology comes along?
I think you said it was every 3 years is the upgrade.
Okay.
Sounds probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds really good. Sounds much needed. And would this integrate eventually into body cams if you choose them?
Yeah. To be honest with you, the package deal that they have set up with us actually come with body cams
and
that entire system. I will say this, I'm not entirely sold on body cams yet. You'll find across the nation there's about a 50-50 split on those. You're looking, the body cams show a two-dimensional version of a three-dimensional world.
Right.
And there are many things that it doesn't catch. Also, it's also used very negatively by the media at times. And there's also redaction issues when you have to have personnel and there's a public request. Public records request, who does that? How do I get that redaction done? I know there's software, and but it still takes time, especially if something is long and drawn out. So there's an added expense on the back door of a body cam, so I'm a little concerned about that. I'm not out of the ballpark on it, but I'm not sold on it yet.
Okay. Commissioner
Morgan. Sheriff, one of the technological challenges we've had in this county is because of the terrain, our MDTs don't always connect to the network very well. Mm-hmm. And is there any risk of the cameras having that same issue?
Okay. Because they'll record the data. It goes into their the in-car server, if you will, or disk, memory stick. And then if you want it to download in the field and you have good connection, you can do that. If you don't want to, you can go back into the station. There could be, potentially, Commissioner Morgan, if there was an issue with the live feed. That would be the only issue, that if they weren't getting good connectivity, I wouldn't be able to see it. But that certainly isn't a storage issue.
And there's protections in place that individual officers cannot tamper with.
Absolutely. There's an administrative block. The only people that could mess with it would basically be myself and Under Sheriff Snyder.
Okay. Well, you got to watch out with him. No, I'm just kidding.
Is he here?
Yes.
You want to talk about him?
Yeah.
So I ask the board for basically the permission to continue moving forward, the permission to spend, and I'll say up to the total cost of the bid. That's not my intention in any way, shape, or form. Like I said, I want to at least get to half of that as my goal, and then to move forward with that project.
Sounds great. You're asking for pursuing it and then bringing us a contract?
Yes.
Or did you want delegated authority to do that contract?
Typically,
we do it with your signature, it's up to you.
It really makes no difference to me.
Okay.
I mean, if you guys would like to have, you commissioners would like to.
I think it'd be more comfortable if the whole board saw it.
Sure, I have no problem
Sounds
with that.
Great.
When I get the final quote, the final contract, the grants, and all that, I'll be happy to present that in front of you. But. But I do ask, more or less, for your permission to go forward and looking at that total bid amount as a possibility, not a reality.
We just received an email about the Office of Emergency Management Grants that they have removed the required 10% local match on some communications grants that we are eligible for through Homeland Security, and it might be worth. Looking into, I'll forward you guys the email.
Please.
But it might be an opportunity that there's some other grants that we'd be able to get right now that don't have the 10% match that previously have.
Great. That'd be good. Okay.
Okay.
Is there anything, because we're under the microscope for the cannabis industry nationally, is there anything that could come about for that? Say, we're going to need to, they're going to need information or evidence or whatever?
Be tough to sell, I think. I don't know, Commissioner. I don't see the connection as far as the in-car camera systems.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll wait for your time. This will be great.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Item number 3 is Department Business. We have Public Works Field Services Agreement in general. Steve Vincent with Avista is also part of this. then we'll move
Come
into
on up,
transition.
Join.
And Rob Brandes, Public Works Director, will talk about this agreement.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. So a couple weeks back, Vista approached us with the concept of us performing some vegetation management above some of their gas mains, and I'll let Steve get into kind of their company policy as to why that area is expanding. But we were intrigued because this is going to be chipping primarily work that's happening where we would be doing it anyway, on county roads. I'll give you a map just kind of showing you a general idea of where these lines run to give you a sense of where we're talking. Primarily north of Grants Pass, kind of like the Granite Hill through Colonial Valley loop. And so on the ground, it's about 7 miles, and our expectation is that there's probably 40 days of work. It's a bit tough to pin that out once you start getting in there and going. But effectively, we would do that work as quickly as we are able. It's going to be a fill-in. Steve doesn't necessarily have a date certain, but we're going to get as far as we can, as fast as we can. We then use our cost accounting system to generate a bill for time and materials and then send that to Avista for reimbursement. I'll let Steve talk a bit more as to why we got to this point.
Yeah, so for the record, Steve Vincent with Avista Utilities. And natural gas utilities have had increasing federal regulation around the safekeeping of our system. Every time there's an incident somewhere in the country in a utility, the rulemakers open the rule books and kind of take a second look at maybe something they had missed. And vegetation management is one of those. Our distribution system that feeds the needs of Grants Pass comes up off of an interstate pipeline. It comes out of British Columbia and follows the I-5 corridor. And as it comes through Josephine County, it's really on the east side of Interstate 5, and it's up Granite Hill Road. And so our main feeds that come into Grants Pass, you can see in the map, are the lines that are really east of Merlin, where they're really our main feeds. We normally wouldn't do this on distribution systems in neighborhoods. If a tree grows and there's tree roots around a distribution line in somebody's yard, it's less expensive for us to just move the line than to remove the tree. But along these county right-of-ways, there are enough large diameter trees and other vegetation that we really need to go about removing these, whereas we probably wouldn't have had to, you know, in the last 10 years. Just kind of a greater regulatory oversight on this particular issue. So the reason why we wanted to approach County Public Works, you all do a lot of work in the public right-of-ways already. There may be things that will eventually make your list as a hazard to the traveling public that you'd need to remove, and so that helps. We could have gone to the private sector to do this, and we do on the electric side, and our electric service territory, as you see Pacific Power do that. But I think that there's just a more natural partnership with County Public Works to do this, and we did this with Jackson County Public Works over the last several years. We kind of have them on retainer to work through a similar part of our distribution system where there are trees in the right-of-way that have just kind of reached a point where it's time to remove. So just to express our thanks to Public Works for being receptive to the idea. And in this case, we're going to write somebody a check to do all this work.
Well, we just bought two brand new chippers, so I think we're well poised to do the best chipping work the money will buy.
The timing's good.
So I'm providing.
Even if we did spend a penny on that.
Well, we should appreciate that. That's great.
There are a couple of questions. We're not pulling tree stumps, are we? Because I'm looking at this gas line up here, the tree roots can wrap around it. So if we go in and yank that stump out and yank your gas line out at the same time.
No, we're not pulling.
We're just cutting them.
Grinding them.
Cut them off, grind them off, grind the stump out.
Yeah.
Okay. No chance of getting, as we're grinding the stump, getting into your gas line.
No. And
if our guys go 30 inches deep with the grinder, I got problems.
Yeah, this is a surface.
I'm asking. I don't want to ask.
Yeah, we go.
I don't want to ask when I.
We'll go to grid.
Okay.
So just to make you aware, we're providing 100 copies of these to be in the trucks so that if a property owner approaches Public Works employees, that there's this. We also have sort of a media relations communication plan with a set of message points that look a lot like this.
Yeah.
So that if we need to, so we've kind of got that all scripted already. We do have some placards that we are going to give County Public Works, so that if somebody asks, you know, what is this work about? And then finally, we have a contract employee on vegetation management that's done a yeoman's work. He's contacted every property owner along this route and received written consent from every one of them except for two. And those last two, they'll just kind of go back and continue to try and persuade. As a gas utility under the federal rules, we really don't need consent, but we're going to still ask for it, and we're going to still try and, you know, make this as easy as we can. One of the reasons why I really wanted to speak to you as a commission is that I think up some of these county right-of-ways, there are property owners and residents that may be quick to try and elevate their frustration to you all. So I thought it was important to come in front of you just to make you aware. And then again, our ability to get consent from nearly everybody along the way. So that's a relief.
And Commissioner Hare had to step out. He asked us to continue going. Do you have any questions?
No, not at all. I think it's got to be done.
Andy's back, so
and
it's
we might as well. Gilshead County might as well do it rather than anybody else, I think.
It's good. It's a good win-win. Quite frankly, it's a more robust level of chipping than we would do were it just us. I couldn't quantify how much, but I think we're getting 60-70% of this value just right back in our pockets. And the timing is right. Routes like this, we don't landscape them. We go through. We hit them pretty hard, and it's due. It's been quite a few years for that stretch. So
scope of work,
fortuitous timing, and yeah, we'll go as quick as possible.
How long it'll take to do it off?
Rubric's guess is probably 40 working days. We won't get 40 straight days because we're going to get pulled off with storms and whatnot, and that kind of thing.
Timeline for completion? Do you have a deadline?
Well, end of the year, but we kind of put a number out there. 75,000 is what we have in our budget for the rest of the year. Oh, if we could back up 30 days, we might get started sooner, but fire season, right? It just ended, so.
Well, I'm looking at 40 days, and we're
chipping
halfway,
crew.
Yeah, we're there.
Chipping crew's about
and we've got holidays,
days,
and you're not going to be grinding on Thanksgiving Day,
right?
That's for sure.
We'll be close to expanding it. That's about 25 days of chipping crew for the 75,000, and between now and December 31st, it'll be real close to that, so.
Okay.
That we may have work in 2018 as well.
So to that end, could I get an ascension of like a verbal due proceed? We just assume get started Monday if the board's
amenable. Yeah, I don't see a problem.
No WBS next week, right? So
right.
Buy us a few more days. Okay, cool.
Don't hesitate to call me if you have any questions or concerns or anything comes to your attention.
Thank you,
Steve. Mr. Vincent, I think I'd approve. I'd like a motion from the board to endorse moving forward and delegating the liaison to do any contract if necessary.
Can do that
in the interim if you have it ready. And it's
I've got. I'm gonna walk over to legal to sign, and then we'll get it back over.
Great.
Okay. And one more quick.
Such a motion has been made by
Dan.
Seconded by Morgan. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 3-0. Great.
And our response to the management partners is being collated right now. I'll be dropping it off here in the next hour or so you can have your light reading for the long weekend.
Cool.
All right. Thanks.
All right. We'll ratify that at the next weekly business session, that decision, but moving it forward. You have a resolution, bikeways, parkways, Mr. Prentice, or is that? Yeah, that's him. You want to handle that because he just walked out? Bikeways and Walkways Committee, an appointment.
Should we call
let me get
back
to page 20.
I think it's a name that I didn't recognize, so I don't have any.
Mr. Brandis, keep walking.
Yeah, it's not a name I recognize either. Maybe he should give us a little talk on that. That'd be great.
You're still on topic.
So close.
Oh, where else did I have?
Yeah, you've.
We know you're excited about the
resolution number 2017-02 in the matter of appointment to the Bikeways and Walkways Committee. We've got a person.
Keith,
yes. He has been expressing an interest for a couple months now. He's actually sat in on a couple meetings. Seems like he'd be a really good fit for that committee. We struggle to find members that are going to stay involved. They kind of hit a month or two and then start to kind of fade at times. So
sure.
The consensus of the group at the meetings, he was there and he was a good fit for that. So
right, well, with the presentation package, it could be more.
We're pushing him to say, yeah, you guys get ready to start giving more input because we want to hear from him.
Okay. We can move that forward.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Item number B is transit under 3B, First Amendment to IGA between City of Grants Pass and Josephine County for pedestrian access to transit.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, sir.
This is an existing agreement that we had with the City of Grants Pass. They are not a direct recipient from the Federal Transit Administration, but the county is. So they receive CMAQ funds, congestion mitigation and air quality, to put in, it seems like it's somewhere, it's like 20,000 linear square feet of sidewalks, interconnected sidewalks to existing transit stops. And so they had these CMAQ funds to do that. And based on some of the environmental concerns, it's easier to transfer those funds from Federal Highway to Federal Transit in terms of the administration. So they went ahead and did that, and what we end up doing, or the benefit of doing that, is you can get a categorical exclusion for all of your environmental review work that would be required beforehand. So that's how the funds ended up coming from the FTA to the county and passed through to the City of Grants Pass. To give you an example of what happens if you don't follow this procedure and you don't get a categorical exclusion, the perfect example is the City of Grants Pass's bus shelter project.
Yeah, we know enough about that one.
Okay. So that's what happens if you have to abide by all of those guidelines. And by getting this categorical exclusion, which the city, or which the Federal Transit Administration says okay to, because their existing roads, curbs, gutters are already there, it's only sidewalks. So you shouldn't have to go through that long process for your environmental review. So anyway, to make the long story short, the actual agreement has run out. The project is still underway, so we need to get an amendment to push this thing forward.
I'll only support it if you never mention the bus shelters again.
I won't.
You can do that. I'm not obligated by that agreement. I could bring it up a lot.
No, we've trimmed that down to BS. We don't talk BS anymore.
So the project's still going. I actually delayed it last year because it was 2 years ago when we went through trying to review, the FTA said, they pointed out that my department was essentially lacking in some of our third-party oversight. So I wanted to make sure all that stuff was taken
care of. Do you have it done now?
Mm-hmm. Have it done, submit to the FTA. And so that just makes sure that assures them that their money is being taken care of correctly. So I delayed it once. Then the city delayed it because the projects kept coming in overbid significantly. So the project finally got underway. It looks like they'll end up doing about half of what was originally estimated just because of the increased cost. And it should be done by 2018-19.
And it's not, that money is not predicated by a linear foot amount. It's by this amount of money. How much sidewalk can you get with that in your locale?
That's exactly right. Okay. At the end, when it's all said and done, I will explain to them why the segments didn't get built out in fully, and just explain why, because it's pretty easy.
This probably is on the tail end of CMAQ, because right now we have Salem, I think, just popped in, and they're going to take a big nudge out of all CMAQ funds.
Yeah, CMAQ.
They've got some air issues that we don't have. I'm looking for CMAQ at some point to dry up here because we have good air quality. We have done what CMAQ money is supposed to be for. And I don't know if there's an ongoing thing to try to make it even better or
it's maintenance. Huh? It's maintenance or preservation of the air quality. So we will get that funds, but you're exactly right. Salem and Eugene jumped into the mix.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the amount that's allocated locally was cut by, it seems like about $1 million-something a year. This was the very beginning of those projects. So once this is over, the only CMAQ projects that seem to be out there is ours for bus purchases.
Okie dokie.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks. Pat suggested I did this so we could make sure that we had something. Can this get signed because there's no WBS for the next
2 weeks? Is on the 21st.
Okay. Since this is in she just mentioned it, and I don't know the legality of it, but she mentioned that I might press for action, being that it's going to be 2 weeks before there's the next
Pat
meeting.
Pat said, isn't this a substantial amount of pass-through?
It's all passed through.
I know,
but it's also a continuance, not a new agreement? Or is it a new agreement?
It would. The other agreement expired, so.
But it's not a new concept.
No.
So we're just amending the IGA. We're not signing a new one.
No, we are signing a new one. You are signing a new one. So if it has to go to the work study session,
is
I'm sorry, the next board meeting.
Is there a need for an expedited or no? Not really.
As far as I know, I don't
think
there is.
I think it'll go to the next weekly business session.
Okay.
Which is Tuesday the 21st.
We would do a ratification anyway if we did that
today,
but it would only be necessary if it was needing to be expedited.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like it is, so.
I'm okay with it.
I think your liaison, this is pretty simple. If you wrote something for Commissioner DeYoung, you wouldn't have to be there necessarily to talk about it. As it is an ongoing agreement, it's not a new concept, and it's not a new budgetary thing. We anticipated this. It can be a consent calendar item for my purview. So
this is, as the chairman said, this is so simple, even Commissioner Dion can handle it.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you did.
It's your sound.
I liked it. I caught it.
So I can't borrow your pen here real quick. So when did you say that? It was Tuesday the 21st?
Correct.
You're not supposed to pick up on that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chansey.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We have airports here for item number 3C. Number one, change order number one to FAA Grant 11 with Copeland Paving Incorporated for increase in electrical installation and well decommissioning for east side parallel taxiway and new runway lighting construction. This is at the North Valley Merlin Grants Pass Airport. Then item number two is the department update. So,
good afternoon, Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Graves.
So, the first item is simply an increase to the FAA contract that we have going, an AIP grant to build the second parallel taxiway out of the Grants Pass Airport. When we were grading and excavating, et cetera, we discovered an abandoned well. And so,
that's what you should have been connected to all these years.
Yeah. Sure, wasn't one of those random test holes they were doing, and they just.
We have a lot of those too, but this was actually a well that had never been properly decommissioned. So, since it was discovered during the performance of an AIP contract with the federal government, we have to go through a certain protocol, and then they pay us 90% of the cost of doing that. So, that and then the. Precision approach path indicator lights were added by, at our request, by the FAA.
Good. It's a text, I'm sorry.
That's no problem. I just want to make sure that it's not a duck and cover alert.
Like it's
you know?
A special text from the president.
Right. We are getting our visual approach slope indicator lights, which tell the pilot whether they're too high or too low on the approach to the airport, failed several years ago, and all of our attempts to revive them failed, as well as the FAA's attempts. And so those items were added into this contract. Since we're working out there to put in this new taxiway, and we have to modify the airport electrical at the same time, then we added the new precision approach slope indicator lights. These they're called PAPIs. The world of the FAA is the world of acronyms. We have all these.
And it's not a tractor?
It's not a tractor, not a Pape tractor or a Kubota or anything else, yeah, John Deere. So it's a relatively straightforward. However, and it's only $38,000 and change, which is a relatively small amount compared to the larger grant. However, this is a change order to the contract which required the signature of all three commissioners. And so we have to have all three commissioners sign the change order, even if it's four. Uno dinero. So anyway, that's the story on that. And so I would ask that you agree to the contract change order, which is for a total of $38,103 to the Grant 11 project. And we will be reimbursed approximately 90% of that total once we incur the expense.
Any more surprises out there that you can see?
Well, yeah, if I knew about them, they wouldn't be a surprise, would they? not that I expect, but if we do find gold, I'll let you know.
One update since last time, though, is FAA kind of gave a different feedback on a project coming up that I don't know if you want to just give a brief cap on.
Which one? On the taxiway or the extension of the
extension
runway?
Extension runway.
Yeah, yeah, that's all good. And I'll I can talk about that a little bit as we go through the quarterly update.
Cool.
I have one of these for Ms. Wendy and a few for anyone else who's interested. But and I'll just, since you asked a question, I'll talk about that right now. We have joint planning conferences every year with the FAA. So the airport sponsor, that's Josephine County, ODA, Oregon Department of Aviation, and the FAA get together on a teleconference, and these are scheduled items, and we have an agenda. And the agenda is basically to revisit the five-year rolling capital improvement plan. So this year, we are doing a bunch of work, and this year, I mean this fiscal year, so we're in the 2018 fiscal year for the federal government right now. We will be receiving a grant of approximately $450,000 to $500,000 later this fiscal year, probably in June or July, for a master plan update, airport layout plan update, survey, et cetera.
Didn't we just do it?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And
not just.
It's in, well, 5 years.
I think it's just been 2012 before you got
here. Yeah. No, I finished it.
You finished
Yeah, I finished this and the one at Illinois Valley.
Right.
So that had a 2011 date. This Grants Pass had a 2012 date. Okay. And typically the FAA is happy to have a master plan that's, you know, 10 years old or less. They want these things to be refreshed every 10 years or so at the most. When they are seriously considering spending as much money as is required for a runway extension, they want to have a recently updated master plan, an airport layout plan, and environmental determination and all kinds of things. So you can view it a couple different ways. You can view it as a confirmation of the fact that they're serious about doing this right and leading up to the runway extension with the several-step process. The first step being a master plan update. Or you can view it as a delaying tactic that the FAA is saying, well, you've got a master plan that's only 5 years old, but since you want a runway extension that's going to cost $10 to $15 million, maybe we'll just have you do another master plan update this year.
Now, how much has changed?
And that'll take 2 years to finalize and complete, and then we can revisit the runway extension. You know, exactly. So there's a couple ways to look at it.
Security.
I prefer the optimistic view.
Can we breeze through it? I mean, it's like the resource management plan that the BLM is going to have to do after this legal settlement. You don't have to redo everything in it. It's like we know the baseline.
I understand. Breeze through it is a relative term when you're talking about
that. I know.
So whereas the FAA says, well, it's a three-year process to go through this and then do a full environmental determination that's going to cover every contingency that we could possibly think of for the next 20 years. Or, hey, we just did one of these 5 years ago. There's nothing else that's changed. We haven't added anything to the airport layout plan or the master plan or the, you know, to the future. We still, you know, in fact, we're reducing by 500 feet the runway extension, which is already in the master plan.
Right.
So, then it's a negotiation process, really.
Bring me up to speed. What's the need? If we don't do a runway extension, are we not able to land 747s? Are we not eligible for firefighting Borate bombers? Or what is it?
I know that the Krauss-Crafts, historically of the world, would have preferred a longer runway, not for landing, I guess, for takeoff.
It's for takeoff. It's a safety issue. When I'm talking to the FAA, it's a safety issue.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Always.
When I'm talking to the state, who's possibly going to help us with any part of this? It's economic development and commercial business activity. You know, and those are, and I'm not being flippant, those are absolutely the number one priorities for those agencies.
Sure.
So I've been collecting data for years now on the types of airplanes that we have at the airport that are limited in their, you could fill them up with 10 people and full fuel and go fly halfway across the country, okay? Except at Grants Pass Airport, during the summer especially, from June through about October,
no air.
You can't do that. It's 100 degrees out, it's 90 degrees out, and the FAA requires that an aircraft that's going to operate at full gross weight must have what's called a balanced field length in order to remain safe. And the balance field length for about a dozen aircraft we have based at that airport right now is more than 4,000 feet. And that is how long our runway is currently. So it's a safety issue. And
now that ratchets back if you put on less fuel.
It does. So here's exactly what happens. Dutch Bros wants to fly 11 people to Scottsdale, Arizona for a grand opening or to negotiate a contract and buy a chunk of land. Okay, this is a typical kind of a mission for them. They would normally load up, put all 10 people on the airplane, fill it up with fuel, fly to Scottsdale, be there in 2 hours or less, do their deal, fill it up with fuel again, fly back home. Okay, but from June until about October, they take two airplanes.
Got it.
So now they have four pilots.
Or they could take one airplane and land and refuel halfway to Scottsdale.
Right, which means they get there 45 minutes later.
At least.
And 45 minutes sooner to leave and just have less time to do their job. So
time is money.
But it is, you know, it's one of those things when we're looking at economic development and looking at opportunities of expansion, the airport is a key piece to the recruitment of companies looking at our area.
Exactly.
And the ability to expand. One of the things that was amazing to me, we went up to the Aurora Airport just south of Wilsonville. They have 1,500 family wage jobs on the airport. And it's family wage jobs, not service jobs, not minimum wage.
Yeah.
The ability to bring in jobs that will keep people here. We have an individual in our community right now trying to bring an air academy to our community, and he's got a meeting with Alaska Airlines Horizon about training pilots at our airport. The opportunity to have that kind of partnership means we need to have a runway that can accommodate the jets to train those pilots.
So
and imagine us being a training.
What do we do to get there? You say we have to do FAA, say we have to do...
Yep. I think that if we stay on the case, we can have that runway extension in about 5 years. Okay. Now, if we were self-fundable, okay, let's just say, you know, we could pull $15 million out of our ear, and we could have that work done, including meeting all of the federal requirements for environmental determination, et cetera, probably in a year and a half. Okay, so being at the mercy of the grantors, okay, the federal government who's granting us these, we have to follow all their rules. And if they have a policy guidance letter that comes out that says, you know, we really think we should slow this process down a little and let's take 3 years to evaluate the runway extension instead of two, we have to accept that. And these things happen all the time. So
it's congressional. Where's the pressure point of influence?
Well, any you know, congressional level representation that makes a phone call or sends a letter to the FAA, especially to the Northwest region or to headquarters, that gets attention. That gets attention immediately. And I think that if we can judiciously apply some legislative pressure from our region to the FAA and not necessarily focus so much on the business and economic development aspect, but on the safety aspect. And
yes.
I thank God I don't have to point to an accident to make the point,
yeah.
Okay, but which is always the way things happen.
But
you
I
know,
mean,
that's how you get stuff done if someone
is
crashes.
A branded,
you know,
element that people,
yeah,
recognize,
yeah,
is going to be significant in their ability to, you know, maintain this as their regional hub.
Yeah.
When you look at their region, this is not where you would put the hub. It should be over in Bend or something centrally located to the northwest, what their distribution
possibly
yeah, headquarters should
and
be.
And there's no reason why you can't have several focuses or nodes, business nodes,
yeah,
for the aviation industry. A lot of my conversations with people who are looking to relocate or to expand, they end when I tell them we have a 4,000-foot runway.
Would a letter from the board, all signed by the board, have any?
It could not hurt. It would
to
be
FAA?
Very helpful. Yep.
So
yeah,
what
very
I
helpful.
Need to do
that,
is,
yeah,
sit down with the congressional representatives that are going to,
sure,
be at AOC next week, and if before, you know,
we'll pitch this, and then if you could dovetail a draft letter that we could get them follow up with, Commissioner Morgan could do that, and then put it in their hands and say, this is what we're looking to do. I don't want to wait 5 years.
Right.
It seems like I've been waiting 5 years. We've been talking about this for a long time.
This runway extension has been in our master plan for 30 years.
Yeah.
I've got 1980-something documents that show a 6,000-foot runway at Grants Pass Airport. And
you said you chopped that back by 500 feet to try to move it up. I'd say leave the 2,000 feet in there. I mean, 6,000 is the...
Well, there's two-edged swords to a lot of this. If I go to 6,000 feet, then I suddenly have moved the airport into what's called a Category 1B airport. We're a Category 2 airport right now. Category 2 airports qualify for 10% match on all grants. Category 1s have to come up with 20% match or more. If we extend the runway out to 6,000 feet, the only way we can go is to the northwest. That means the touchdown zone is a half a mile closer to the mountains. And then we have obstacle clearance issues, instrument approach issues. I mean, I'm not saying, no, you can't do it. But it is an unbelievably complicated mess to try to, you know, push things out much beyond, certainly beyond 6,000 feet, you know, total length.
And that seems crazy because the footprint of the property that we have is way in excess of that 2,000 feet. I mean, it...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our property goes way out beyond that.
Generous on that side.
But, you know, when you get to, and if you're out at, say, climbing up I-5 to Sexton Summit, okay, well, Sexton Summit, to a pilot, that's the low point. You know, to a person driving their car, that's the highest they're going to be in that area, right? But that's the lowest point on the ground that you can get through those mountains. And you got Mount Sexton over here at 4,300 or 4,400 feet. And then just on the other side to your left, you've got three other peaks that are higher than that. Mm-hmm. And they are in direct line with the runway. So the instrument approach that we have had developed just recently, which is about to be published within the next several months, actually brings aircraft in at about a 13-degree angle offset from the center line of the runway in order to take advantage of coming in over lower terrain. And, you know, it becomes relevant when you're actually in really bad weather trying to find that airport and there's clouds and fog and rain and you're getting bumped around and the FAA and you, they don't want airplanes closer to the ground than about 1,000 feet. To make allowances for updrafts, downdrafts, whatever, corrections. You need to get back on your
flight. I'll tell you how much I love to stay on the ground and drive.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Legitimate question. Very good question. Long answer, sorry. But there's tons and tons of considerations that have to be made. So
one thing that stood out to me on Tuesday night, I know it's on your list, so I'm going to bring it because I know it's low priority. But for an economic development standpoint, we're working on some water suppression issues and
fire suppression,
storage out at Illinois Valley. Mm-hmm. But what popped out as new to me, that's probably not new that I just didn't get it before Tuesday night, was that we're not selling fuel at Illinois Valley Airport, which means it's not being utilized as much as it could be.
Because we don't have a fuel truck.
We have a fuel truck there, yes.
But
at the Gettles setting?
Yes, Bill Gettles' business. And for a lot of reasons, we run the truck when Bill Gettles is not there.
Yeah.
But he's not able to be there right now because of some personal family issues.
And but we have a full-time employee out there that should be partially.
Yes, and he's a full-time employee, and he's there on site. He bends over backwards to service. He will run the truck.
But we need a better solution.
We need a much better solution.
And
here's the thing. It's very, very true with these capital-intensive improvements and airport such things is that if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they will come. I hear a lot of times, don't give me that stuff. I want to see the demand first before I make a commitment. But if there's no fuel at that airport, I mean, I can tell you a dozen times, you know, someone's called me up and said, I want to bring my Cessna Sovereign in. I've got 12 people for a wedding at the Caves. You got Jet A at the airport, right? You've got rental car service at the airport, right? Or I can get a limo out there, you know, right? No. Nope. There are no rental car companies that will bring a car out to the Illinois airport. There's no jet fuel at the Illinois Valley Airport. I have a 5,000-foot runway that'll accept almost you know, any jet traffic, but I have to turn them away. I said, well, just land at Grants Pass, we'll fill you up, and then you can hop over there and drop off your passengers, and we'll send a car down. You know, I mean, that's it's not professional, you know. If we had a self-service fuel station there, which is similar to the one we have at Grants Pass, I would guarantee that traffic would triple or quadruple at that airport within 2 years.
What's the payback? That's an investment. When does the money come back?
Good question. I have the ability at Grants Pass Airport to measure that somewhat because I have a communications pipeline with all the businesses that are located there. And so I had the exact same question I had to deal with. We had a Connect Oregon 5 grant, allowed us to put in an airport weather station. Part of the justification for the grant is that I claimed that it would be advantageous to the businesses at the airport and that there'd be more jobs, more hiring, more flight operations, et cetera. Okay? That has been in operation for 1 year, and I now have hard data from third-party sources. I'm paying them for this data, you know, flightaware.com, et cetera. I can show that the numbers of instrument approaches in and out of that airport have gone up by 30% just over the last year since that weather station was installed. I can point to an additional 6 or 8 employees, 6 for sure, that have been hired at that airport because of the increased flight operation activity. Dutch Bros is shopping for another
what
aircraft.
What does it cost for one of these systems?
$250,000. Oh,
I was thinking
$150,000. Yeah, no, it was about $242,000. Yeah, yeah, a lot of fuel.
Well, I wanted to bring it to your attention, though, in a different way than just on your list. Because as we are looking at economic development and making plans for where we're going and certain things that maybe would have a better return on investment than others, it's a couple of them that I thought it'd be worth having that conversation with you guys to just bring it under your awareness.
Yep.
So the truck is one phase version.
It is. It's the lowest common denominator.
It's another version. Is there an intermediary version where you could say, well, that paid itself off in 2 years, and
yes,
we can say a justification. If you do the math, boy, 250, we pay that back in 4 years, and done. 4 or 5 years sounds like a reasonable payback.
Yeah, that kind of thing is an absolutely perfect candidate for economic development money. I have put in a grant application for a CORE grant, and the most I can get is $150,000 for that grant application. That's about half or 60% of what I need to actually put in a self-service, you know, fuel island. But if I get that grant, I'm going. I'm going to do it, you know, and I'll make up for it with operations money or however I need to. If I absolutely want, you know, hard proof, I have to gather the evidence both before and after the installation. So
the new company that bought Rough and Ready out there, do they have jets of their own or a private plane?
I'm not aware.
They're a pretty good sized company.
They are. They are. Yep, the spare time supply guys, and they're very communicative. And I just have not invited them to bring their aircraft up to the airport because I have no place to park them.
You don't have hangars.
Let's explore.
No hangars and no ramp.
I'm supportive. We just need to get some hard stuff.
Yeah. Yep. People who use airplanes like those airplanes, like, you know, Cessna Sovereigns and the 441 Conquest that Dutch Bros is flying, they will not leave them outside. That you can't leave an airplane like that outside. It has to be in a hangar. And you've got millions of dollars of assets.
But isn't hangar space their responsibility?
It can be.
So we'll provide the place to land.
Yep.
You need to provide the hangar if you want a hangar there.
Well, that can work.
I mean, that sounds like a reasonable request to me.
Right. Well, we have what are called private hangar ground leases, and we'll lease the county ground and help them in every way we can. But they spend the money, they do the development, they accept the risk, and they get the ROI. You know.
She says yes.
Yep. So we have a lot of private hangars out at the Grants Pass Airport. About half of the hangars out there are privately developed on county leases. But it is an inefficient business model. If we own the hangar, the cash flow and the business case is 3 or 4 times better. Yeah.
You've got 6 minutes to
Finish.
I know you always...
Well, I've supplied you... I mean, I took a few photos. We have some... high technology drone photos on the second page here of the projects that were are nearing completion at the Grants Pass Airport. All four of these pictures are taken within the last 3 or 4 months at the Grants Pass Airport. While we've got the taxiway paving, and you can, if you stare at this, it's a large format photo, but I shrunk them down to stick them on the page here. This is the new taxiway in the process of being paved. The upper left picture, the lower left picture is the new hangar access area. Where we will build two hangar buildings at the Grants Pass Airport, which I would like the county to own. I want the county to own those buildings because the business case is much stronger. If we do that, the cash flow is better, and we can pay those buildings off quicker. And
then you own them.
When we own them, yes.
Well, and it's a revenue stream to have his match of 10 to 20% that he's required to do, and it's hard for him to find a way to generate that revenue to come up with it. So.
Well, you know, and it's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend operating dollars to make up for capital. Yeah.
Because every capital thing requires some sort of operation balance.
Well, I appreciate your time and great questions. And as you can tell, I can talk all day long about the stuff. Never, yeah, that's fine, you know.
We never have enough time to talk about the airports, Larry. Yeah. We could spend all day, but I hope you don't feel as though we don't care about it.
I don't.
Probably
no, not at
so
all.
Much that it takes up too much. Takes up so much time.
Well, you know, I am happy to meet with.
Well, we're going to need to come back and talk about the school and 210 Tacoma and get the players in the room. I had a conversation with a guy today who was unaware of the proposal and was like, "I'm trying to work on something very similarly, kind of probably would dovetail." And frankly, in my mind, it really rounds out the proposal. The proposal's not shallow, but it's not to the full spectrum of what I think the potential for utilization of that property and the airport is. This makes it comprehensive.
Okay.
And I think
maybe a combination, because I know that the Southern Oregon Air Academy, and I think you're going to get a presentation from Caleb LaPlante in the next several days. There are plugins to that proposal that allow other users to come in and other revenue streams.
Well, let's put that on the calendar before the end of the year. I think probably sooner rather than later.
Well, I think that presentation is being put together in anticipation of being able to deliver it to you before the end of this month.
I ran into Caleb the other day, and I know that Commissioner Morgan has been working on this. What I told him is, I said, I don't need it, you know, laced in silver and pretty.
Sure.
Bound and all that. Yeah. Give me the Cliff Notes version, and like the sheriff did, you've done a lot of research. You've got structure. I don't need it put to bed ready.
Right.
Just tell me where you're at, and let us kind of get an idea, and then say, yeah, sure, this is where we're good to go.
On the note about the airport, your liaison to finance, we've had over a month the response on the project manager for North Valley, and it hasn't really come our way. That needs to, I believe.
You guys have a draft scope of work and RFP that you're supposed to be reviewing, you and Rob.
Yep, I've got
it. I haven't reviewed it yet.
Okay. I also gave Arthur just last week, when I saw this for the first time, email traffic. Some suggestions for other engineering firms, civil engineering firms,
We're going to do that because there's competency out there that we don't have to start from scratch with some of the others. So, and that was understood from the get-go that we're going to shop this around. It doesn't have to be the one.
Yeah, I just don't know where Arthur is in that
process. And that's why I bring it up, because one of the first steps is getting the airport annexed into the North Valley Industrial Park and the other district.
I have a map for that. We need to review that.
And I just don't want to see that be delayed. I want to see us keep making progress, because if that's in place, then some other things can happen.
Oh, absolutely. My plan was to review the scope and RFP over the next week when I'm up in Eugene and kind of get that ready to present to the board and say, it's good to go. We can shop it out to those Civil Wests of the world and see what they've got to say about it.
Yep.
So I think it'd work.
Very good.
Great.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Mr. Rose. Fairgrounds, letter of support for the indoor arena grant at the fairgrounds. That's something the board previously discussed and endorsed. I've taken a review of the letter, and it's short and sweet and to the point. I don't think it says any more or any less than what we intended. So we're good to go. I think we will sign up and sign it and good to go.
That's exactly what I need. Thank you.
Yep. Human resources.
Thank you for your work.
Addition to community corrections.
See you later, girls.
Yep.
We're going to table your revision of policy revision just for sake of time, but I think we've got a draft to review. I haven't done as detailed a review as I need to, but we'll do next week. And I think the short version of what I've reviewed so far is things look good, and I think making things consistent is one of your goals.
Yeah.
And you do a good job. It feels like we've just reviewed this, but you've done your review since it's been an ongoing thing that I think you've done since you've been here. But your predecessor had done one right before she left, Ms. Moy. And so I think it's a standard thing we're going to have reviewing. Don't feel like you've done it, and then that'll be it. You're going to do it a couple of times before your terms are up. So,
as a general rule of thumb, I like to go over a comprehensive personnel policy review every 2 years, and mostly it's just because laws change and a lot of things need updating. Some of these revisions are a result of legal changes. So first thing is a position addition. Community Corrections has gotten some more money in adjustment reinvestment, and as such would like to add another position. Finance has already signed off on it. They have the funding. So it's, but it is a new position that wasn't in the budget, so it needs board approval.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I just would like to, Nate Gowrieran did an incredible job advocating for supplemental justice reinvestment dollars. Josephine County was awarded twice the amount of any other county shy of Multnomah County. We literally, it was unheard of. I thought what we were asking for would never be obtained. And he pushed and pushed, and literally his work individually on behalf of Josephine County, and they appropriated enough for three deputies, a deputy district attorney, and a PO, based on his advocacy. So,
and it's really the meeting the goal of the justice reinvestment from the beginning, and being an example to those other counties about what you can do with how you do the best practices and applied. I think it's also the staff. When you were over there, it's a reflection of that team effort, that this is where we're going.
Yeah.
We probably have a lot of plowable ground, too, with the clients that we have.
There's an awful lot of attention from all over Oregon that's pointed at Josephine County right now. And Community Corrections is one of those that's really responded in a very positive way. I mean, we're starting to show up on radar we never did in the past. And as a result,
on the radar in a positive way.
In a positive way, yeah.
And we've been on the radar for other reasons, but in a good way.
But the increase in justice reinvestment, that's just one of the spinoffs of it.
Yep.
They're doing exactly what they need him to do, and they love it.
It's an administrative element. We'll move forward to that.
And Lipstick did approve and recommend, but I really just, you guys should know that Nate is the one who advocated and got this through.
Yeah, quite commendable. Community, we're good.
One other quick thing, I'm just going to add. I'm just going to give you some information. I don't expect anything to be done with it today, but being as you want a little more time to review, so I've completed my director wage study.
Oh, good.
And so I will just kind of
give
that.
I heard you needed a PR to change Mr. Graves.
We already took care of
this.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, in the contact, you were listed as a manager. You're a director now.
Yeah, so.
Go get him, Tiger.
Again, I don't need anything decided today, but this is something for you to kind of review as you're reviewing the policy manual. Big picture is that our department managers are below their comps. A lot of the comps have made some increases in the salary of their directors over the last year or two. Basically, our directors on average are 5 to 10% below their comps, and there's a few that are more than that.
Some of these are significantly.
It's a couple things of note. Our structure for salary is a little different than other counties. The distance between the bottom and the top is greater, and part of that is because we have a 6% increase after 6 months because of how we structure our purse. So I'm actually okay with the fact that we're quite a bit behind on the bottom. I look more at where are we at the top. And, I mean, as you can see, most of them are 5 or 10% below. Forestry is a little tricky because their comps are tricky, but I did, you know, have some private sector numbers in there as well as a couple public sectors. He's significantly behind his comps.
Well, if his performance was better, then maybe we could consider that. I'm just kidding. He's quadrupled the revenues, and I think he's certainly keeping up with his peers, certainly keeping up with my expectations about why he was hired.
If we're so far behind, this is just strictly me looking at this.
Shoot.
We're so far behind at the bottom, we're going to lose employees before they ever even get to where they're fairly close at the top.
So I have
You start losing employees because there's a lot of recruitment going on, a lot of pirating in this industry. And if we're that far behind at the low, you know, a guy says, you know, I'm going to their lowest thing and gaining 21%. And you go, whoa.
So there's also another nexus. If you look at this list, none of these people are general fund dependent. So when we're talking about doing an adjustment to their salaries, not a single one of these people actually gets paid for it out of the general fund.
And I'm looking at merit-based. I look at merit-based in my own employees. I don't care how long they've lived there or anything else or worked there. I'm looking at merit-based, and I won't even say any name, but there's some departments that are really doing well, mm-hmm. and they're funding themselves. They're finding more money. They're applying for grants. They're doing this. They're issuing more permits. Whatever they do, they're gaining, but yet they're still 25% back of the low.
So one of my recommendations is a way to address that, and I've talked individually, I think to all three of you about some of this, but the structure of our salary is today is based upon a pretty standard union structure where you get hired, you work for 7 or 8 years, and then you become a journeyman, whatever. That works great for almost everyone, except it doesn't work for directors. So part of this policy change is I'm recommending a structural change for how director salaries are put in. It doesn't take as long to get to the top. My expectation isn't to have a director work for 7 or 8 years to become a journeyman director. You're hiring a director because they know their stuff.
Low to come up?
The bottom is going to move up a little bit. Also, there's less steps. And a biggest thing is I'm recommending something that's fairly unique.
Change the number of steps from 12 to 9 with two or three.
To get consider with that non-union.
So everyone else has 9 steps plus the 3 longevity. And I'm recommending less for the directors.
Okay.
The other thing is our current practice for our longevity is you're not even eligible for longevity until you've been with the county for 10 years. The average age of directors that we hire is 52 years old, so that would mean that they'd have to be here.
I got 10 years. I'm okay.
I'm well beyond it.
So that being said, to qualify for the top thing, you'd have to be here 20 years, which means they'd have to be, you know, on average 72 years old before they'd even qualify.
Yeah.
I don't think that structure is beneficial for directors, so I'm recommending a change in how we structure longevity as well.
You really need to do something about this or you're not going to get younger people. You want that 52 years, the average 52-year-old mm-hmm. guy for a director.
Mm-hmm.
You want those directors down in the 40 years, year of age, so that you can get, you know, 52, the guy's looking 10 years and he's out of here. Early retirement. But to me, in my mind, directors, that's the person that sets the stage and sets the tone for his entire department.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not happy, nobody's happy. Mm-hmm. That's where that enthusiasm comes from, the director. That's what I like. I like that director to be enthusiastic, coming here with a great attitude, good for Josephine County, and he conveys that to the people that work for him.
Mm-hmm.
Boss has a bad mood. Guess what? Like, wife's not happy. Nobody's happy.
My only concern with reducing the steps
is
that say we have an incredible 35-year-old director that we mm-hmm. hire. they're topped out in 7 years or whatever that is, and now they're 42 and they don't get another raise for 70 years or 30 years.
So
they retire at 70, you know, and all that.
Well,
kind of
I do have some longevity steps that are still in it, and the way I'd like to structure longevity for directors, instead of it, they don't get anything until 10 years, it's they get one every 3 years after they've topped out to a maximum of three different longevities.
Did you tell somebody on this conversation too much more to where we can talk
sure.
about it? I do have some questions. If you wouldn't mind putting in where we are with this, I mean, where is
not the ranges, but where we are with the individuals.
Well, all of it, but just add a column that says where are these people currently? Where are these program? Where are these department directors?
So, what step are they currently at?
What's their salary right
now?
What's
their money? Like,
where are we? I mean,
I do have the minimum maximum of the range.
Yeah.
But if you want the individual person, I can put that in there.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind,
okay. Somewhere wherever it makes sense that I can see. Oh wow, that's what the number of where we are, where we need to be.
Sure,
that would
I can put where they are, because I mean, there's some folks that are. I don't. No one's at the beginning of the range.
No.
But the other thing is, we don't typically hire in the beginning of the range for a director. It's pretty rare. There's been a couple that we have, but not very commonly. So,
one of the ones that I'm thinking about, and I told myself I wasn't going to say anymore, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sarah was an example of somebody who really hadn't managed a program to this degree, but everything lined up for me. You guys didn't hire her, right?
No.
She's been here longer than everybody. It's just happened so fast. she just jumped off the page in her resume and her enthusiasm and willingness and the dedication. I'm like, yeah, this person doesn't have a resume to back up what we're looking to put her into, but nobody else came close as far as the enthusiasm for the program. And I said, that is worth every dime as far as a line on a resume to me, to where we could give that person a chance. But once they reach that point of like competency, she asked me for something, this internal campground deal. Done. She has done thorough research. She wants it to live on its own, and I don't need to look at it that thoroughly. I mean, I'm going to do the review. Done. She's not the level that, you know. So I think it's appropriate to have it, but I think maybe we need the option of whether or not that. I don't want to preclude somebody like a Sarah being able to come in because the system doesn't serve itself that they aren't a full-fledged, you know, parks director at that point, but they are now.
I look at it from the standpoint that we're asking people to come in and turn programs around, and when you first came in, every one of them was on the ropes. And these people have turned these different departments around, and yet we're going to, nope, that's as far as we're going. They're bringing the money in, and they get nothing back for it. They're nope, we're going to, but it's every 3 years or it's every 10 years. Policy's policy, but there's got to be, there has to be some merit in there somewhere.
Well,
when you deal with somebody's finances, they're not working here for free. They're working here for money. They're not working here because they love it. That's they're not for the name of the game. Part of that is money and how they're providing for their family. And if they could turn a program completely around, and it's now on the straight and narrow and in the black and making money, then there should be some sort of compensation for them or something.
So
right.
We have
that's it. We're getting off. We can talk about this.
Well, we do have two methodologies, actually three methodologies, to address that exact issue. In our current policy manual, we have two methodologies to reward performance, and we've done that for a handful of people in the last few years. Basically, it's a merit bonus.
I've done that. You guys, your predecessors, no one else has done that.
I've seen it in my department. Individual employees be
individual managers, but I mean board members. Haven't done that without you got it, but I suggested it.
That's a change in philosophy of the board.
You guys need to be aware of that as a tool. I don't know that a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it used to be, it was a tool that was never used. It's only been the last,
two
or 3 years that we've even used that tool. Another thing.
And it's frankly not financial, it's just a recognition of a significance, achievement.
It's a little bit of money, but not very much.
Yeah.
The other thing that's relevant as it relates to department manager or anyone, frankly, we have structured pay structure, which is very common in government. Ultimately, you all are the executive head. All the rules that I'm operating under, you all create and change at your will. If you want to make an exception and say, well, this director's doing a heck of a good job, I want to give him a two-step instead of one-step or whatever, you have 100% discretion to do that.
And I think we need to think about that more often.
Yep.
You're right. When thinking about when I came in 7 years ago, the clerk's office was the only office that didn't need significant improvement and change. I mean, everybody needed.
These are things that, in my business, it was once a year. I had a day, one day that they could sit down with the boss, we go to lunch, they could tell me anything I want to know, and I could tell them anything they want to know, and we'd discuss money once a year.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
So, anyway, this is something to think on. I'll give you the information you want for where each individual director sits. I already have it sitting on my desk.
Perfect.
Because I did it this morning.
If you wouldn't mind incorporating it into this.
I'll put it in there,
That'd be fantastic.
That's easy. Just adding it.
I really
appreciate
your diligence on this, JJ. I know that nobody's going to appreciate the hours and time that went into each and every one of these. But I think the managers are going to appreciate it.
Here is the scales that I would recommend changing to.
Okay.
So it looks a little different.
I gave you mine, didn't I?
We'll take a look
at this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Schmelzer, truly appreciate your patience.
If you guys want to get started, I am going to sneak out real quick.
My thing will take 1 minute.
Yeah, come on in.
I totally appreciate the indulgence here, but...
You'll understand.
You need her?
Mr.
Morgan?
Okay. U.S. Forest Service. Stoll Reeves has done some fairly significant, at nobody's expense, research regarding the county's posture, U.S. Forest Service. They want to know whether there's any interest in inviting a representative from Stoll Reeves to come to Eugene next week.
Yes.
Maybe put together an ad hoc meeting.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. I will relay that.
Great.
Thank you, everybody.
I read ahead, and I support moving ahead her.
Me too, right? The housing one's good. I had other stats that I was thinking about referencing, but I don't think that they're actually relevant, and they don't really. The audience would not care about those. They care about what you put in here, and that's really what's important. So I thought it was. I didn't have a single improvement. I thought it was just right.
Okay, so the other commissioners haven't seen that yet.
Oh.
Commissioner Harris. So let's start with let's start with the SBDC dues and. That one, okay?
What's SBDC first?
Okay, so SBDC
is... Small Business Development Center.
Yes, the Small Business Development Center. They do business counseling services for our people, so if you have an entrepreneur who wants to go into business, they'll help them with a business plan and setting them up with
mentors. Is that a county function, or is that through the college?
It's actually a federal program, and it's in partnership with the college. So okay. SBDC partners with
so
RCC.
Small Business Development Center is through Rogue Community College. That's who handles all the money. We get the money and give it to Rogue Community College?
So that's something different. No. So SBDC is, like I said, it's a federal program. In our area, it's partnered with RCC. So they kind of work together on providing the services. And what SBDC does, they get money from different sources. They pay their people to go out and help people.
We
then
don't
as
give
a
them any money. We were giving the IBC.
We pay dues to SBDC.
Yeah. And who do we collect dues from? Small businesses?
No. What we do is we take our economic development dollars and we pay dues to SBDC to provide services for free to our entrepreneurs or businesses that need help.
What's an RLF?
Okay, so then the second part of that is there's a revolving loan fund where the county used... The revolving loan fund takes county money and borrows it out to businesses, and they pay it back at a low interest rate, so the money keeps revolving around. So you don't have to keep shoving money into that program. Rather, the loan money, as it's paid, it just keeps revolving. You can loan out to new people. What happens is our RLF program is administered. SBDC takes care of that, and what they do is they contract with the Illinois Valley Community Development Department, Kenny Hoek,
They let it out because City of Grants Pass had it for a while and nobody took it.
Well, what happened is City of Grants Pass just joined it last year. They're going through the IBCDO, Kenny, as well.
Right.
It
actually was more than that. It started as a grant program where people were just getting the money, but there was like, well, where's the longevity? Where are we seeing the success in that? So by changing it from a grant program to a revolving loan, you're renewing the program and it's continuing, and you're also There's some responsibility put back on
the
recipient.
There's some checkpoints.
Yeah. And so I prefer to support the revolving loan program versus just a grant program as well because of, you know, who's in business in 5 years? Who's continuing to increase jobs to the area?
I see so much overlap in all of these. So Ready has a loan program. Oregon Community College has a loan program. Illinois Valley has a loan program. We have loan programs all over the place, all to do the same thing, pointing at small business. Every one of them.
Well,
why can't we consolidate all that and So Ready do the whole thing?
Okay, so So Ready does larger loans, and IBCDO does those smaller scale loans, like $10,000, $25,000, the stuff that So Ready really wouldn't mess with. So IBCDO is helping more of the smaller, very startup entrepreneur or somebody that needs a truck, for example. I did ask them to provide the list of the types of loans that they have provided this year and last year. So you have that in your packet. For example, what they did this year was some loans on portable housing, restaurant and food service, value-added agriculture, log trucking, private school, auto parts, and internet services. The year before, they helped fund log trucking, beer retailing, retail dessert provider, cidery, bicycle manufacturer, gravel production, wildfire tanker, storage rental, and vintage auto parts. So, you know, they're doing smaller scale loans. But yeah, so what this is
success rate on repayment?
You know, if I remember right, I think he only had one default. I'm going to have to go back to this and look.
I don't want to be too critical of the quality of the loans. I don't really know that I care. I mean, they're trying to create jobs, and there's a nexus of that. But if there's a repayment of those loans, then they're doing what it was intended to do, whether or not it's, you know, an aggregate element, a beer, a cidery, those are trendy, cool things. If they're repaying the loan, it's working.
If they're repaying the loan, that's fine. I know that a lot of times these things get involved where all of a sudden your foreclosure rate or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Default is just, you know, it gets to be 30-40%, and that's not taking care of itself.
Yeah.
So if the program is a success, you lend out 10 and you get 11-2 back or 10-5 back to go back into the program.
Yep.
I'm golden with this. I'm not familiar with this loan program. All I'm saying is that there's a ton of them out there.
You did touch on a point, but I think it has been defined that So Ready is going to do stuff in excess of 25. They're really doing things below that threshold. There is an administrative thing that I want to see that, you know, predicated on the number of loans or something like that that they're doing. I don't know how we can restructure the administrative
Do we have an annual look at this thing as to how many dues we collect and so on and so forth?
It feels as though you guys have seen and met with Kenny and
they were here in
Goss.
May.
Okay. Right. Once already. I don't think it's such a bad idea to do it more than once a year, if you guys are so inclined.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe twice a year. I was able to speak with Ron on Monday night at the Economic Development Committee, and I'm going to make a point to go down and see their new innovation center. I wasn't able to do the tour previously. The other thing is I asked him specifically a question based on our last conversation about this, of why is Grants Pass not listed in these dollars of being recipients, and his response was they have now provided their own funds, and so it wasn't given in our report because they have their own funding source. So they were showing what our funding source was providing for. And so it's not that Grants Pass isn't receiving those, it's just from a different funding source now.
The other concern is that we're making sure that this isn't an IV-focused thing. It's supposed to be countywide. So if 9 out of 10 loans...
It's just being administered from out there.
Right, that's fine. But if 9 out of 10 loans are all to the Illinois Valley, there's something wrong with the communication about... Because I know that there are small businesses that want to start up in Murphy, Williams, Merlin. You know, our second... Well, our third incorporated city would be Merlin if it were ability to have a... I mean, it's got a Selma and Merlin, those would be the places. Murphy would be another one, but we don't do incorporated cities anymore. It just seems Merlin's like there's commerce going on in those areas where there should be a reflection of the Longbelt. What is the time frame, and is it possible to have them come in, Mr. Goss and Kenny?
Well, they're waiting to get paid. So what happened is this was presented in our budget, and it went through the budget committee. They submitted the bill. So I brought the Soretti and the SBDC bills forward to you, and you said, hey, separate out the Soretti and the SBDC. You approved the Soretti. You said, come back with SBDC with more information, which they submitted, which you have in front of you. So they would like to get going and get the $35,000. Originally, they had asked for $45,000, if you remember that. And at the budget, we said, no, it's $35,000 is what we presented and said we would support. So they're waiting for that.
I don't need to see them for my approval. But it's just more like a, hey, let's check in every once in a while.
But if you want a six-month report and to be able to ask questions about that, I think we could schedule that but move forward with this.
Sure. So you said
okay with that.
The challenge is it's the $10,000 administrative element to a $25,000. Well, what's the whole bulk of the program?
Well, Ron said that each counselor costs about $30,000 a year, and they have several counselors. So, you know,
I'm not talking about the SBDC dues. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're. That dues is fine. How much is that?
Well, the dues are $35,000, and he says about 10 of that is actually going towards the RLF administration because Kenny costs $30,000 a year. So you said about a third of that is spent on our program, so we're paying about $10,000 towards RLF.
And do you know what the total value of the RLF is?
I do.
So that adds up to about 30%.
Pretty close.
Right now.
Yeah. So the total, the current, we have 24 loans, and the value is $308,000. $33,000 is in collections. There's 42 that are late that you have to kind of keep on. They call slow pay. We have $192,000 available to loan yet. And we have $37,000 in pending applications.
Can you say it all again?
Sure. So we have 24 loans right now, and they're valued at $308,000.
That includes a delinquency that you've got there?
Yes. Okay. That would include
total.
The collections and slow pay. So, you know, that takes up a lot of their time to go after that as well. But then, so we have $308,000, and we still have $192,000 available to loan. So we're up to $400,000 or $500,000.
They're not asking for any more money.
No. I told them that the board, because we had talked about this earlier, I told them the board was not supportive of putting more money into the RLF until it was loaned out and we actually needed more rather than have money mm-hmm. put in there and just sit there.
Yeah, the purpose of the $35,000 would be to lend it out and make it available, correct?
No,
well, we had given like $100,000 and stuff like that.
$25,000 a quarter is what we were doing for a couple of years.
As a matter of fact, last year we had said, we had talked about $25,000 a quarter as needed was and they wanted $25,000 a quarter, and I said, no, it's my understanding from the board, it's as needed. If you need it, we'd give you that. So last year, I think altogether, we gave them just $25,000 to loan out. But then we still paid the SBDC dues, which helped pay them.
Pending $37,000.
Pending applications are $37,000.
So I think that it would be, so if you take 192 minus 37, you're still left with 150.
150.
So I think that that's where the value, the money that's sitting in the revolving loan fund can help. That's too much to be just sitting there.
Can we put a bottom cap on that? Just say when you get to 50 grand, when you start running short of funds and you have 50,000 left to lend out, because it's just smaller loans, you're going to probably be able to take care of three or four people with that 50,000. Mm-hmm. Then come see us. That's the trigger.
For money to put into the fund?
Right. Then you come and see us, and then we'll
and
put...
And to solve the problem of paying for this, I don't want to use economic development funds in your current budget when they've got $150,000 that can account for that. So that's where I would like to take the money from is out of their balance of the revolving loan fund for the 35, the 10, and 25. Is that right, how it goes? Or it's 35 is what
it's
they're
35
asking.
It's 35 is what they're asking.
Okay, yeah, 35. Does that make sense?
So you want to pay the 35 out of their what they have to loan people?
Mm-hmm. I need to buy down that balance. It's too high. It's a half of what they've loaned entirely, minus what they have pending. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm getting. As a ratio, having 50% of what you're outstanding minus your pending is plenty.
Yeah, you're not putting their pending in any jeopardy whatsoever because it's already calculated in there.
It's all there.
And you still have 150 in reserve.
I don't know if we can take that out of there. That'd be a question I can't answer.
I'm pretty sure we
can. I would say that, keep in mind, the other services we're getting under SBDC, they're not directly tied to this
loan.
That's okay.
So, it's okay. I want more. Whatever I can do to get this balance where it needs to be, and we never defined the intent of where you should have in reserve for loanable stuff. We've never done that. We're going to have to go. And but if you can keep a dollar in your account for economic development, and there's a project in airports that comes up, or whatever else, that's where I'd like to see it. So I know it's a fiscal manipulation, and it could be that the agreement doesn't necessarily satisfy that.
Yeah.
We'll figure out a way to navigate that, because it's at the end of the day, the county holds the purse strings to future distributions. So if we can negotiate that with them to say, that's where we'd like to see those funds coming from. It may not always come that way, but probably won't next year. If you loan it all out or get below that $50,000 where Commissioner DeYoung said, we'll kick more money in there. But for right now, their balance of reserve is too high for me. Especially their...
There's more traffic in there we can always add to
if
it.
If they had $120,000 of pending loan applications, then I wouldn't
different
be
deal.
Suggesting doing this. They don't. They've got 37 minus 192. That's where I would like to. And I'm happy to have that conversation with Ron and Mr. Houck.
So is it safe to say we're approving the 35, but
yes.
saying we want it to be paid out of what's in this loan fund?
Yes. Do we retain that loan fund or they do?
They do.
Okay.
They have access to that. So, and I'll have to talk to Wally, too, because Wally has the agreement with them to see if that's something we can
he
even
can
legally
comply,
do.
Yeah.
We can do it. We'll find a way.
Okay.
I guarantee it.
Okay.
If that's the board's prerogative.
You know, with that one, well, it is a very valid concern of how much money is available and they're not being utilized.
There's no harm in having a conversation.
No.
Starting with this.
Okay, I can go quickly through these. So the next one is the ADU housing matter.
Did you say you've seen this?
No, they have not. So this is for Wendy. So basically, I have...
is this both mine?
Talked to my liaison about the idea of an emergency housing declaration. And then emergency housing declaration saying that we're in a crisis, we need to come up with programs, amendments, things that would allow for housing not normally allowed or addressed. And then I also have here an order that would direct me to create such text amendments to that effect.
I endorse these both. I've read them, and I didn't have anything to add. There is additional statistics, but I don't think they speak to the audience, which is the governor. And there is talk of allowing pilot projects. Much like Executive Order 1207 back in 2012 that I worked on for 3 years, that didn't really result in anything, but I think it was doomed to fail from the beginning because an application had to be filed with DLCD. All that to say that I think that we've got the statistics, the timing, the receptiveness at the legislature to hear something like this, and I think the citizens are very interested in looking at creative ways that we can, you know, not go outside the Senate Bill 100 type of box, but kind of tweak it in the gray areas.
Well, now it's a statewide, it's almost a nationwide problem of not enough housing.
Oregon was the number one place to move to,
yeah.
And we weren't prepared. We got hit real hard in 08 with the housing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the local contractors, they're all real gun-shy about putting out, you know, a big development. And something needs to say, we'll work with you on that. But the private sector that's got an ADU capacity issue on their existing place and the resources to deal with it, but the good stock market, sure, here's a hedge your bet long-term investment to where you can make a pencil and it solves the housing issue.
What kind of leverage do we have for relaxing some of the codes and relaxing some of the requirements?
Well, not much. The state is very top-heavy. You know, if the governor would support this, she could relax some of those requirements for us. The board has had conversations in the past where they've said, I don't want to use the word I don't care what the governor says, but one of these things where we need to do something, you know, so let's at least protect ourselves by saying we were so concerned we passed an emergency declaration, and yeah, we may be going pushing the envelope with the state a little bit, but we had to. We really felt we had to because we needed to start addressing these housing issues.
Do we need to give the governor ideas on what we think needs to happen down here rather than having the governor and I don't, it's not that I don't trust, I don't think they have the wherewithal in Salem to address a problem here in Josephine County with our, you know, like for instance, shelter housing. If I went up there, they don't understand that we got people down here that are wet and cold. We want to make them warm and dry. I'm not interested in what kind of walls they have, how thick the walls are, how many panes of window they have, what type heat pump they have. Get out of their way and let them be warm and dry.
And if the governor would support this, that would definitely help because then we could say, put all those rules aside, let us do what we need to do. Because the rest of the state is also having, you know, a housing crisis, I doubt the governor will sign this. But at least we know that we've done everything we can as a county to declare this and say, yeah, we're going to push the envelope a little bit here, but we really feel we have to.
It's a step in the right direction, and I think this is a longer conversation that we're not going to be able to solve today.
Is this...
No, but I support moving forward with this.
Yeah, I do too. And is this something that the AOC needs to take a look at?
They are. There's a housing committee that will take a look at this and address it. I want to be on the cutting edge of how we address housing, and hitting your nail on the head with we're going to solve. But there's a private sector element to doing that, too. Mm-hmm. It's not all going to be done by Oregon Housing Authority.
No.
You know, so I think this is a real...
But if you freed up the contractors and the private sector to do it, they would do it.
It really
right now, it's the private sector and the contractors are held to a higher... You know, they're held to a real strict regulations that they can't do it. They would love to build a cheaper home.
Mm-hmm. Which increases the cost, which means we can't provide it to our people. Mm-hmm. So
now, if I haven't read every last detail of it, but...
Well, I think you just got it, so I was just hoping you could look at it and we could discuss it on the 21st.
I think we're going to be moving it forward on the administrative calendar at the weekly business session.
All right, I can email you at it.
A week and a half, 2 weeks away,
we can change it.
Do we have workforce housing and recruitment in there?
I talk about the availability, affordability, and the health of the housing units.
Okay. I really do have to go. I think we're going to have time to work on that. I think if there are tweaks that we need to do, that's fine.
Okay.
The only thing I have left then is marijuana, and so I don't know if you have to go if you want to be part of this or not. This is for Wendy.
Yourself anyway.
I just can't participate in the discussion. It doesn't mean that I have to leave.
Mr. Ford, would you hit that other light for me? Thank you.
So
that'll run Simon out of here.
I wouldn't mind leaving, and so there's a couple things that I have to address. If you wouldn't mind, it
sure.
is around marijuana. Shafana Feinberg has requested the board. Cannabis Advisory Committee move forward with something. I just think that the board needs to see what she was proposing. I think it came to us entirely.
It did. My concern is before she spoke, I made very clear to her that anything that was a land use would need to go through the planning department, not through the Cannabis Advisory Panel.
No.
And her request to the panel was land use. And her request to us is land use.
Right.
So the appropriate process is not through the cannabis panel, and that was made clear to her. But I would, before anything move forward, I would like to get legal's take. I need to look up the Oregon right to farm and regulations on EFU. I thought
it's
this has been addressed.
Clear. It's very clear. We would be challenged. Legal and I have already chatted about this. Wally was at the cannabis advisory, so we had an opportunity to talk about it and liaison to planning. I'm pretty familiar with the Oregon Right to Farm and Forest Acts, and this would definitely go in a direction. Leading agricultural commodity right now is cow-calf pair. Second is nursery. Nursery is who would be negatively impacted, and I understand that they would probably challenge this on a local level so you don't get a foothold in a county. They're very interested in not getting an additional regulation started someplace, but that's just my cursory review. We can talk about it further, but I did think that the board needed to hear the fact that it was presented, and the Cannabis Advisory Committee didn't necessarily endorse it. They didn't take it up as an action item, so it isn't coming from them to address your issue, Commissioner Morgan. I think they recognize that it might be a little outside of their wheelhouse to put forth a recommendation, but it's out there nonetheless, and the other item I think we can just talk about in the future. I think we're working on the Republican Party of the state and Mr. Rice's challenge to us. I'm going to hold off on my changing my party affiliation until I hear back from the state. They said that you may be sending them a link. I tried to send them the link. I did. Technically inept. So.
I have sent that now.
Okay.
So, and it was just the testimony. It wasn't the full video.
Okay.
And I had to get assistance with it, but it was something that took very little time to get done. But I have sent that on, and I texted her that I did that. But both called me. I had extensive conversations with them. And I'm appreciative of them reaching out and hearing what the goals of, and where things are at. And I'm not looking to change anything at this time, but I do appreciate that they said that what was presented at our meeting was not representative of anybody other than that individual.
Right. So, okay. I don't think, is there anything else that you guys have for the board?
So I just want to, just to finish up on the Shauna Feinberg stuff, that one, her request in the email says specifically a companion to whatever RR regulations you pass,
yes,
adding this relation to industrial scale cannabis greenhouse complexes on resource lands. I believe that is something that is not related to the RR as proposed. It's not something we can add at this time. It would not be something to bring alongside as her request is. This would have to be something entirely dealt with separately on its own in a separate ordinance process, and would need to start from scratch.
It doesn't qualify for an order direction. It's not a clarification of existing code. It would be a change from state law and current RLDC. So orders are clarifications on existing code. They're not changes in policy. So like what we did with the order, clarifying that we don't do non-conforming creations. We just don't do that. It may not be specifically spelled out in the code. It should be applied, and we did an order to do that. This would be outside of the intent of an order. So I can agree with that. I also think that it would deviate. You don't have anything similar in the proposed RRs, and I'm speaking objectively because I've recused myself. I don't think that it would qualify as needing to go back for a first reading if you guys wanted to include that.
To me, it's a different topic entirely from what
it
we're looking at.
It can be taken up in the future if you so choose. Nothing else? You guys can continue. You're in the church. I'm out.
Thank you.
I will see you guys next week. Julie, are you up there in Eugene?
No, I'm foot surgery. I'm not going to go to Eugene, but I'll just stay in touch.
Are you sending anybody from your office? I've sat in our planners' meetings before. I don't know if they like it or don't. I don't care.
I go every once in a while. You know, they just gave us the agenda this week, so I asked James if he would go, but James hurt his shoulder, so we're all falling apart in our office.
Yeah, sounds like
so,
it.
So he's not going, but just
good
pop
notes.
In.
On getting a meeting room, today's the last day. Can I do that starting Monday? Can I,
yeah,
we need a meeting room up there, I can just do it on the spur of the moment?
Totally.
Perfect.
They have meeting rooms set aside for you.
It's the only question I have. I'll get it done.
If you have any problems, you let me know, and we'll get it done.
Okay.
Get
her done.
So I just want to share. So after the hearing, the board had agreed that, you know, strike the word OLCC in some of the definitions, and there was another minor change which were made. But what I wanted to share with you today were some changes suggested by Commissioner Morgan. So I just want to talk through these because we have to get the final draft of the paper if we want to still stay on track with having the hearing on November 29th. Okay. So I've made the changes suggested by Commissioner Morgan in colored ink, and I'll just walk through them, okay? If you go to page 2, and I do have some copies here if people want them. So on page 2, we had said that they couldn't have more than 12 marijuana plants. And Commissioner Morgan had requested that it be consistent with the OMMP state code, which says 12 mature plants and 24 immature plants.
Well, I want consistency with what the state definitions are. I think that's a reasonable request.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that we don't continue to water this thing to where all of a sudden everybody's basically grandfathered. That's what the residents out there are saying. You know what? They just keep coming to you. And I had two women in here earlier today, and I said, "We're done.
Yeah.
We're done. We're not going to water it down anymore. You're going to have to live with some regulation. If you don't, you're going to be gone anyway. You've got to understand that we're here. We're trying to keep your industry, but it's got to be regulated. That's what 91 said, that it would be regulated, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And you need to understand that. Yes, it's going to be inconvenient for some of the growers, and I'm not going to be able to put something in here that meets with every situation on every piece of ground.
Right.
That's what the variance process is for. That's what non-conforming use or any of the other things. That's what that's for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be able to write language if you have a yellow gate, you're allowed 22 plants and five heroin addicts. I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I get concerned about. But I do like this.
Okay.
I think this right here, if this is consistent with what state definitions are for being more than 12 plants and become commercial. I think we just had it before that it was just more than 12 plants.
Yeah, we were just looking at plants, period.
Plants, period.
Because
that's what we thought it said. If you had 13 plants, it didn't matter whether they were a little big or whatever.
Well, yeah,
Yeah,
because OLCC was saying 12 was the cutoff. And then we didn't look at the younger plants because we were also looking at Jackson, which had some size limits and just... So we just kind of left the whole immature plant thing out of the discussion.
Not knowing this industry, but wouldn't you think that if they had 24 immature plants, that's not an outdoor grow, it's going to be inside a greenhouse?
Typically.
Commissioner, wouldn't you think that?
What's that?
The immature plants.
If you had 12 plants, you could have 12 mature plants outside. But you're not going to have 24 immature plants outside. You're probably...
Not generally.
Because that's your propagation, is that
correct.
The word?
Yeah.
So you would be growing the 24 plants indoors for future use outdoors, maybe?
Most people, yes.
The ones I've seen are...
You're going to get some that grow outside.
Even in a house, in a garage. I mean, when they're starts, they're tiny. It doesn't take up much space. And then as they get bigger, you need to spread out some. But, yeah, generally speaking, they are indoor until a certain stage.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you go to page 4.
So we're okay on 2, right?
You're going to get mad at me. I'm just letting you know.
I'm not going to get mad at you.
No, yet. I don't think you're
going to. I haven't gone to the back page yet.
So let's go to page 4 at the very top, okay?
Page 4, yeah.
What we had in blue is what it read. There shall be no mechanically generated noise associated with a commercial marijuana production site from dusk to dawn. Remember, it did say Monday through Saturday, and we took that out, okay?
Now it's Monday through Sunday, right?
Yeah,
all seven days a week.
Yep.
Yeah, we took that out, yeah.
But we had a letter from an attorney who represents the marijuana growers who suggested that we have a decibel limit. So what this does is it says, except for noise that you can keep below 30 dBA, there shall be no mechanically generated noise. So in other words, if you have a quiet fan that's doing less than 30 dBA, that mechanically generated noise can continue.
Do you know what 30 dBA is?
Yes, I do. And 30 dBA was...
Give me an example.
You want me to look them up? I have them right here. Yes. So what we did is we looked up decibel ratings to see comparators. What was significant of the decibel levels is that So under the website industrialnoisecontrol.com, they give comparative examples of noise levels. All the way to 10 is breathing, 20 is a whisper or rustling leaves, 30 is quiet rural area. So by the definition, 30 is a quiet rural area. Ambient urban sounds is 40. A large electrical transformer at 100 feet or a quiet suburb is 50. Conversation at a restaurant, background music, air conditioning unit at 100 feet is 60. And then it gets on vacuum cleaner 70.
So I mean 30 is almost non-existent.
Correct.
I don't hear 30.
Well,
at all.
The attorney that suggested we put some dBA limitations in there suggested a higher amount, but the other thing we did is, as Commissioner said, it's supposed to be rural residential, so that guide there helped. But we also looked at the Deschutes County example, and Deschutes is at 30 dBA. So we thought it was very consistent.
As long as we have some documentation and we have some rules involved with it that come from residential normal thing is 30 dBA, your dog barking is way more than 30 dBA.
Yeah.
But that's not sustained, I guess, is what it would...
Correct. We're looking at sustained noise, something that is continuing at that above 30 dBA.
Okay. So their recommendation was 50, which is considered a quiet suburb. Conversation at home and large electrical transformer at 100 feet.
That was the suggestion.
Also, on another site, 50 was the sound of a refrigerator when the motor goes on. Now, my refrigerator makes most noise when the ice machine is making noise, but anyhow... So we went to the industrial one, and with it saying quiet rural area, kind of going back to purpose, that was where that came from. And with Deschutes having it already passed and in play, believed it to be reasonable and defensible.
And Williams CAC had wanted some dBA restrictions when they were talking about their overlay as well. So.
And what did they say in their dBA restriction?
I don't have that in front of me. I can check. But I know they had wanted some limitations, so I think, you know, we have a marijuana grower asking us to put some dBA limitations on. The Williams growers or CAC wanted some limitations, so, you know, we're just trying to do what they want. And
do we have a meter to test it?
No, we do not, and that is one of the concerns I had when William brought it up. I said, you know, you can't just take a cheap meter,
no. And
I really don't want my staff out there crawling around marijuana fields.
It's got to be calibrated and everything else.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a difficult one to.
I used one time, and it was because of the boat races and whatnot.
Oh yeah.
And we went down to Gold Beach. John Blanche and I went down to Gold Beach, and we tested all the boats on the Rogue River, and we took their hull numbers and what it was and how many decibels. And I had FD 105 was probably the highest one out of the whole bunch. And they said, what kind of boat was that? And I said, it was red. It was FD, is the fire truck, fire department, engine number 105, that they sent down to spray the water off, the algae off, so they could get the boats out of the water. It was 125 decibels, and it was your truck. Oops. So what are we going to do with FD 105?
Well, you know, originally...
Take it out of service?
Originally, we kind of shied away from this because I've had experience with measuring decibels, and it's
subjective.
I
honestly, if 30 works for it, defendable, which Commissioner Morgan says, if that's the shoots and it's in the definitions, let's leave 30 in there.
Okay.
It's not enforceable, but it gives them something to a target, and I think it's stricter rather than more lenient, and I'm okay with that.
Okay, so then let's go to the bottom of page 4. And in blue is what we had. So we're talking about setbacks for new marijuana grows on lots that are over 5 acres. What we have in here right now is 100-foot setback if you're indoor and 150 if you're outdoor.
Mm-hmm.
And Commissioner Morgan was suggesting just 100 whether you're indoor or outdoor. And that, too, matched with the Deschutes model that says 100 feet from lot lines.
And I started at 75 and went up to 100, so I'm just letting you know.
You're trying to convince me that you were taught.
There had to be some wiggle room
to
there.
To be quite honest with you, and I think if there's a deviation from the 100, you could do that with the variance variance also.
If somebody wanted less than 100, yes.
Yes. I mean, that's what I'm saying. If they've got, I think the example's been that I've got BLM behind me and a grower here and a grower there. Why do I need a 150-foot setback? If we all are in agreement through the various process, I don't care if both of them grow right up to the fence line. But when it changes use or changes ownership, it's got to go back to that 100 feet. Can that be written in there somewhere, the variance? Maybe on the rules for the variances, when we hand those out, we can address that.
Well, the code already explains that variances can only be given for dimensional standards. So it has to be something numeric. So, you know, you can't let somebody grow where they wouldn't normally, you know, you can't give a use variance. But so if they want a 50-foot setback instead of 100-foot, that's a dimensional standard, and okay. They could apply it for that.
When we do that, I don't want to hold this up. I want this to just go through. I told the two ladies that were in there, I said, you know, you can just, we're almost done. Don't bring any more to us. We're just done. Mm-hmm. We're going to put this on the books because we have to. We want to know, my purpose is the fact that out of courtesy to the grower, we'll hash around what's going on in the growing community right now. But for somebody coming in on January 1, I want them, even if it's not, it's been voted on, and it's an ordinance that, yes, we're, you know, we want to bring that forward, and we're in the waiting period, I'm willing to tell them, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. Yeah. That's what I want. I don't want them to think that they can go ahead and keep it on, because that isn't the way it's going.
And that's the way it's going. Okay. Yeah, people are looking for guidance on it.
Yeah, guidance is exactly what I'm after. So I have no problem with it. Okay.
Okay, for this one?
For this one, yes.
And about this one?
And this one, Danny, I agree. No problem with that either.
Okay.
Is that okay with you?
So, sure.
So does that work for you?
I had a couple other things I wanted to bring up to see if we can. I would like us to approve an order and put forth an order at the same time that requires water rights to get an approved LUX, that you have to show you have water rights in order for a LUX to be approved.
So Jackson County, in Jackson County, they, if you're going to get a LUX, they require you to go up and have the water master sign it. You know, I said that's not on the state form. We can't do it. So I'm trying to see if they did that by order or if they're just doing it.
Well, I think,
would feel much better if there was order than just telling us.
I don't think that's an unreasonable request.
No, it's not.
Because one of the big issues is they're taking all my water and draining my well.
If they're applying for a LUX, that shows they're going into the commercial system.
And it's compatible.
And the Water Master's presentation to the Cannabis Advisory Panel stated that they don't care if it's one plant. If it's commercial, it requires them to show they have water rights. So this is it's consistent with what the state is requiring. It's just saying that you can't get it if you can't show you don't have it.
So this is what the
OLCC... I have probably 4 minutes because I have another meeting.
This is what the OLCC requires right now, that they provide to them. Holding a water right permit or certificate for the proposed premises, or demonstrating that water will be provided by a public or private supplier, or providing proof from the Oregon Water Resources Department that the water to be used for production does not require a water right.
And the water right could include tanks. They demonstrated they've got 4,000 gallons of water there, and this is their provider. Is that a water right or not?
That I do not know. I think Commissioner Morgan is bringing this up right now, but we need more information from the water master. But if you're supportive of looking further into that type of an order, we can bring that information.
Okay, now
back.
I have a quick one, because you have to go. Is it, for instance, we said somewhere in there, I don't know if it's a state requirement, that the people sign on, the owner of the property needs to sign on to the application at some point in time, or they need to be on the paperwork? Is it a rental agreement or a lease agreement between the grower and the landowner, which is signed by both parties? Is that adequate? Because it does bring the owner into that lease agreement for the property to grow cannabis.
For our purposes? We are saying that whoever is applying for that license, whoever's name is on that license, has to be either own that entire parcel or be on that deed. So
but
on, one-fifth owner.
But on a lease, for people that are leasing the land.
We would not allow the leasing of the land.
You wouldn't allow the lease to be adequate, that the owner has agreed to lease the property for use of growing marijuana. It's almost a derivative of the same thing. they are well aware that they are leasing their land for marijuana.
Well, and that's the problem we have right now. They know they're leasing the property, but we're still having the problems. And that's why we had talked about no more leasing. They have to own it or have some ownership investment to be accountable.
Will we have a line on that application that says property owner and they sign it?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll require a copy of the deed to make sure their name, the name on the license, is also identified
on
the
deed. Maybe that satisfies what these people are talking about. I would think so. They just ask about lease agreements and stuff like that. And I thought to myself after they left, I'm on the property and my folks own it and they live in Topeka, Kansas. Yeah, watch me, I'll just sign that. There's no proof of ownership there.
Oh, no, we would check that. Right. And people need to keep in mind, they can lease, but they need to do it outside of a rural residential zone.
There needs to be a line on there. Yeah, okay.
But no, they can lease so long as the person doing the lease is also on the OLCC license.
No, so...
Well, the owner needs to sign off on someone.
The owner has to be a co-OLCC.
In our rules right now, say, in the rural residential, who's ever on that license must also be on that deed.
That's what I'm saying. They can lease it to somebody else, but the owner who owns it on the deed has to be co-registered.
That's correct. They can lease it to somebody to manage it.
It doesn't keep it from leasing it to someone else so long as they realize whoever they lease it to has to make sure they're on the OLCC permit.
So they can lease it. But if I own the land, I can lease it to you to run it, manage it, but my name better be on that OLCC license, and my name better be on the deed.
Correct.
I'm not responsible for all of it. Now, if you don't want to play by those rules, go outside of an RR zone, because we're not going to restrict the leasing of the land at all out there.
Yeah, okay, got it. I think that's okay.
Okay.
And any other matters from commissioners?
No, but I would like to see you and Simon had a list that came out of the cannabis advisory panel of suggestions from a girl, you said, from a female. And you had one, and he had one, but I didn't have one.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
it's on your email.
Okay.
If you read your email, sir, you would see it.
Let me go read my email. Wendy? Tell me where it is.
Okay. Just as a reminder, tomorrow's Veterans Day observed, so the county will be closed, and we take a time to thank a veteran for their service. And next week is the Association of Oregon Counties, so we will be back. Our next weekly business session will be Tuesday morning, November 21st, different than our normal day. So we are adjourned, seeing no further business at 4:31.
I have